Good afternoon. Welcome, Brian Noonan in for Rokan, 720 WGN. Big show planned today. Want you to get involved. 312-981-7200. That's the number for the phone, for the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to Ashley. She is in for a very ill Jeff. We are thinking of our good friend Jeff, our comrade in sound, who is at home nursing, I don't know, some sort of horrible virus. So we're all grateful that he's getting better, but also that he's not here. Because, you know, people are dedicated to their jobs, and they come in when they're sick. And then, like Brian, who's behind the glass and really should be home in bed, but he is here. And also saying he is tougher than Jeff, but I don't want to start that kind of war before we get the show started.
I'm so happy we have our own boxes, Kevin. Oh my God!
Yeah, you guys are lucky.
Away from everybody.
I am not talking to anybody who is outside this little environment that I've created for myself. Ashley has put herself in a hazmat suit, and Brian is trying to be good, not breathing on too many people. But this is the problem. People are coming back from the holidays. And they're like, well, we got to go to work because, you know, you can't miss a day right at the beginning of the year. And then we're all getting sick. Kevin was talking about this, dealing with children over the holidays. Not his own, but just various children. That
nieces and nephews. Oh, nieces all and they nephews. Do kids do is like sneeze and cough, and they always got runny noses.
Kids are, and they have no concept of the right. fact that they are just patient zero for every sort of virus that's running around.
They're very moist little human beings.
They are. And they'll sneeze right on you without a second thought.
And cough. It's like, oh, where's the nearest face? I got to go straight for that.
Oh, and, you know, the concept. I don't know how children can't feel their nose running. Adults can feel it. But children either.
I think they just don't care.
That could be. And it's just, there's a lot of things coming out of this. So you got to stay away from children and sick coworkers. But we're glad Brian's here. We wish Jeff a speedy recovery. Ro will be back with you on Monday afternoon. Kevin and Lauren and Kim are here. We have a surprise for you guys. No, I didn't buy everybody a toaster oven. That was yesterday. But there will be a surprise at some point during the broadcast.
I did get home last night. I asked the roommate, I go, dude, you ever use a toaster oven? And then we went on for like 30 minutes about the toaster oven. He's like, yeah, we got one at work. It's sweet. Throw my sandwich in there.
See? Did you buy one or
yes,
not?
Yes. No, did you go and order one?
That's... Well, no, because like we're talking about it and he goes, dude, I think I'm going to buy a toaster oven. I'm like, okay, let's get a toaster oven.
Oh, nice.
Oven.
Now you just get to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so you don't go in on this together. You wait to see if he actually buys one so you don't have to. Who's going to...
I mean,
is this a
house,
war of attrition
so...
when... You just wait each other out?
No. I don't know. We'll get together and maybe figure
coordinate, write
out.
A schedule
coordinate.
Out.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because you can't. Oh, imagine
search
if you both wanted to toast something, that would be horrible.
You know, have to resort to the regular oven or there's the regular old basic toaster.
Oh.
Can't do that. That's what are you living in a cardboard box on Lower Wacker? Nobody just as we learned yesterday, nobody just toasts things anymore.
Right.
Except me.
If anybody's wondering why we're talking about toast ovens, we talked about it for like an hour last night during the show.
Just
for
listen
reason,
to yesterday's podcast.
Someone mentioned Pop-Tarts, and the next thing you know, we did an hour on toaster ovens.
Listen, you never know where content is going to come
from.
That's the most beautiful
organic
thing about radio. It just happens. And we will be talking about what's going on in the Middle East. We've got Andy Field and Tom Makaitis coming up in the second half hour. Demetrius Ivory will join us in a few minutes to talk about your weekend weather. So far, so good. I'm okay with this winter as of this point, even the little bit of snow we had the other day. But we'll see if that's going to be coming. The Knarble wagon is coming in, and I told this, I saw Kevin in the hall. I hadn't seen you yet, Lauren. There was concern yesterday because I brought up the concept of perhaps today's Knarble would just be mocktails. However, we are having both.
Oh,
so you will have real cocktails, and then there will be a mocktail.
So the mocktail and the mock mocktail, like we talked about.
Right. So, yes, you will get the mock mocktails, and and I'll get a mocktail. And then Richard Roper is going to join us. We're talking about his big movies, Best and Worst from 2019, and we're going to preview the Golden Globes. We'll talk some Blackhawks with Nick Gismondi, and we'll have the top five at five and so much more. There's a lot to get to, but it's nice that Friday has come. This is the Friday that seems like it's Tuesday or Wednesday because these whole last 2 weeks have been so crazy. So now hopefully everybody can regroup over the weekend and Monday can start the real work of 2020.
Yeah,
and this officially, I think, is the last day you can say Happy New Year to people, right? Because
really?
If you drag it into next week,
I feel like you got like a 2 week stretch there.
Do you?
If you hadn't seen a friend.
Well, that's true. I'm sure Ro will want to wish you guys a Happy New Year on Monday when he gets back. So, all right. After Monday, then. I'll make adjustments. I'm not a guy who's all. Some stances I take, I'm going to go to my grave with. Other ones, all right, I could be convinced that, yeah, all right, you can say it on Monday. After Monday, I don't want to hear it.
Okay. I'm gonna leave you a voicemail on Tuesday.
No, you
wishing
won't.
You Happy New Year.
No, you won't leave me a voicemail.
Do
We've
one
already
every month for the whole year, Kev.
We have already covered that. There is going to be a missed call from you, and maybe that'll be enough. Maybe I'll know it's just wishing me a Happy New Year.
I'll text you, hey, I called to wish you a Happy New Year.
Yesterday we were talking about this, people not leaving voicemails. I left the studio. Guess what? Missed call from my daughter. Was there a voicemail? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Just like I told you guys there wouldn't be. It was she continues her trend into 2020, which, you know, at one point I applaud her consistency. And then on the other hand, I'm like, no, maybe change it up a little bit. Or maybe I change it up and just accept the fact that people are not going to leave me a voicemail. Because I had a couple missed calls, no voicemails. I'm just going to text people or get rid of my phone, move to an island. I don't know what I'm going to do, but we're going to do something. We also have to talk about, we're not going to spend a lot of time on cannabis today because that is, you know, people are buying cannabis. But there is a couple new pushes for education because that's one of the big things that everybody's talking about. So we'll get to that as well. But first, we have to go to Lauren. She's got weather. She's got traffic. She's got all kinds of information for us. For News at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. So, Tom might be the most trusted, but the man we go to when we want to know what's happening for the weekend weather is Demetrius Ivory, and he joins us now. Hello, Demetrius. Well, maybe not.
Classic technical difficulty.
Yep. Hello? No, he's not there either. Well, I know I'm where I'm supposed to be. So we will find out. And if, you know, Brian is... Oh, see, now you got Brian up out of his chair.
Uh-oh.
And when he is not feeling well, he doesn't want to have to come in here and deal with me. But we will see. No, we had it all set up with engineering. Anyway, you know, it's you heard Lauren give the weather. And today's kind of sad. Where are we?
Very gloomy.
Overcast, gray. Okay.
I love watching. Is he there? Are you there, Demetrius? Nope, not there either, bro. I love it. This is very behind the scenes.
It's very hide and seek.
I love it. That's the beauty of it. You do the best you can, but a live broadcast, we all saw what happens on New Year's Rockin' Eve. Any kind of live broadcast, we saw, you know, Mark Giangreco in drag. You know what happens when you try to do things live. That's the way
it
goes.
That makes it fun, though.
It does make it fun. A lot of things that are not fun today, though, are happening. The president is giving, making some statements now regarding the what's been going on with Soleimani. He said he was plotting attacks against Americans. The State Department said there was a consensus to act against Soleimani. So a lot of stuff. We will talk to Andy Field after the bottom of the hour to find out. All right, we'll just jump to this then because. That's what we do. Kevin, any big Sox news today?
Nothing
no, but
from
with
the Sox,
big Bears news.
Did 4 years, $53 million for Eddie Jackson. Well-deserved, I believe. Two-time Pro Bowler, All-Pro last year. One of the leaders in the locker room. So the Bears wasting no time locking him up. And Ryan Pace, you can criticize him for a lot of things. But
Let's do that.
This was a very good draft, a fourth rounder. They found Eddie Jackson, safety out of Alabama. So that's a great pick by Ryan Pace. He's got some blemishes on the resume, obviously.
Yes.
I can name a few, but he has found some gems later on in the draft. But Eddie Jackson, 4 years, $53 million. It's apparently extension season in Chicago sports right now.
Yeah, well, at least the people getting extensions are the ones who seem to deserve it. And, you know, because we've sat through off seasons before where people seem to get these extensions. You go, really? That's the person we want to keep, huh?
Yeah.
That's the guy. And unfortunately, the Blackhawks fall last night in Calgary, snapping their road win streak. Now they're off until Sunday when the Red Wings come into town.
That was a wild game in Vancouver last night. I don't know if you guys watched it.
For Vancouver.
Yeah, a little bit before I fell asleep.
It was just up and down. They had a two-goal lead at one point. Patrick Kane,
late in the second, they had the two-goal lead. That's when I went to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got
so it's your fault.
Yeah. I don't know. You want to blame me? You said you were sleeping too.
I'm superstitious.
All right. Yeah.
Lauren's very superstitious. We would go to Roe and Lauren and I will go to Blackhawks games.
Multiple events, White Sox
games. We like to go out after the show. And when Lauren first joined the show, we were going to some Sox games, and one game We were in the beer craft cave out in right field, and the Sox had won. And then in the next game, Lauren's like, we have to get to the craft cave. We have to be there. It was like late in the game. She's like running to the craft cave.
And why do you have
exactly
to be at the craft cave at that certain time?
They won the last time.
Oh,
we were
so that's all right.
We were
and then a time that one of us wasn't there, so it was just like me and Ro, or times that it's been me and Kevin. When one of us is not there, they lose. So we always have to be there together.
We have a major impact on the game.
I see that, and it's impressive and terrifying at the same time. I oftentimes... Well, back in the day, I used to believe more in that. And then I don't know if I just gave up on superstitions or not. And it's fun. It is fun sometimes. I mean, when the Blackhawks were going on their Stanley Cup run, after they won the cup the first time, was that 2010?
Yep.
Yeah. So my buddy was over at the house during the last game. So the next year, when it came down to the deciding game, we were all in the same seats in the same spot. So I guess I believe it. And then even though the third win, we were in a new house, he still was over for the deciding game, or what was ended up being the deciding
game. Keep the tradition
alive. We had to keep the tradition alive. And now, Lauren, I guess you will blame us, because during the last couple seasons, we haven't watched that many games together.
See?
And all right, well, listen, if John McDonough and Jay and everybody want to blame me, I've been blamed for worse. So I'll take the heat. That I went to bed last night late in the second, and things fell apart. But you started to say about Patrick Kane, impressive.
Yeah, he's just unbelievable. He hasn't slowed down at all. He's still one of the best players in the NHL, and he seems to be getting better. But he's single-handedly was keeping them in the game. He gave them the lead, tied it up again as well. He's just so fun to watch.
Yeah, he scored his 991st goal last night. Mm-hmm. Oh, now we're going old school now. Now we're going to go old school and talk to Demetrius on the actual telephone. I know Demetrius, Kevin, and Lauren are very freaked out that you're actually talking to us on a phone. This is weird for them. They're not fans of it. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year.
Hey there. Happy New Year. Yeah, they probably don't remember the phones where you used to have to press the number and it clicks back. Like if you dial a 9, if someone's number has a bunch of 9s in it, it takes 5 minutes just to call them, because it's like click, 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 click. Yeah.
I love those rotary phones. My mom still has one in her house. I wish I were lying about that, but she does. She can't use it, but it's still hanging on the basement wall. So did you have good holidays? Everything good? 2020 off to a good start?
Pretty good. I'd say a pretty good start. Weather-wise, it has, I got to be honest. Yeah, typically this time of the year, it's like, leave early, no lunch, stay late. No, that's not the case now. I mean, it has just been, picture perfect for the last, week or so. So we've had no, problems there. Temperatures have been warmer than normal. No snow. It's just a regular San Diego, a little bit cooler, but San Diego-type forecast weekend.
Yeah, you can't beat that. And I know there were people who were very disappointed about the weather on Christmas. I was not among those people. I thought that Christmas, having it at 60 degrees, was good with me. I'm fine with it.
Me too. You wouldn't believe. And I know you've been doing this a while, the customer service aspect of being in the media or on air anywhere is something that you never get used to. I got a lot of emails from people upset that I was saying, hey, it's nice outside, because it was 50.
Right.
They wanted me to paint it in a negative light.
No. So, see, and if you had painted it in a negative light, you would have got just as many emails from people going, are you crazy? It's 50 degrees. This is great.
I tried to tell them. I said, look, you're kind of outnumbered. I mean, I'll just be honest. You're outnumbered. Yes. But yeah, it was a lot. And even threats from a couple people, really upset.
allow me to ask you this, and if this is too personal, Demetrius, feel free not to answer. Do you actually control the weather?
I don't.
Okay, then threats are not necessary.
Yes, I don't come to praise weather. I come to bury it. some of the people were honestly mixed up, because they thought, it's making climate change seem like it's a good thing. It being 50 degrees here in Chicago on Christmas has very little to do with climate change. That's local.
Okay.
And that goes, that's a drop that goes into a big ocean of global temperatures. So, that kind of doesn't do the same. And I tried to respond, if it's cold, then I get emails from folks saying, what about global warming? you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because people don't, like you said, people don't look at the big picture. They look at their particular area and go, well, it's not supposed to be like this, so that's the definition for global warming.
Exactly, and that's not.
Well, I'm going to have to change my thought pattern, too. But, if you think about it, we had awful snow on Halloween.
Yeah.
So that was strange. And then we had an unusually warm Christmas. That was strange. And we still have a lot of winter to go. So these people who were very upset that there was no snow or cold temperatures, I don't think they're going to be missing out on stuff as we go through the next few months.
Right. Well, case in point, look back to last year. Last year was a lot like this year, in that we got pretty big snow in November, not much in December. And then January, we came out with 18 inches of snow. And we average about 10. So, you know, we got two for the month of December, but that's, you know, basically just like kind of like the year before, not, you know, below normal. In January, all it takes is one or two good, you know, wallops, and you've added, you get all the snow you want and record cold temperatures like we got last year.
Yeah, we'll be fine. What's the weekend look like?
All right, it looks pretty good. A few sprinkles, maybe some flurries early tonight, then turning cloudy, a little bit cooler also. The overnight low temperature around 30. Saturday, variably cloudy, maybe some snow in the morning. We're talking a dusting to an inch, so certainly not much. If you're like me and you just can't wait to just use that shovel or snow blower, you're going to obliterate it anyway. but only about an inch. 34 the high on Saturday. Breezy, partly cloudy Saturday night down to 28. Sunday looks pretty good once again. Temperatures climbing to the mid-40s, and we're expecting strong winds. That's going to be one thing. I think a lot of folks taking down those Christmas lights this weekend, or Hanukkah lights. Yeah, watch out. You're talking wind gusts could be up to 50 miles per hour, so... You know,
all right, I won't be up on the ladder. I'll just, but I'll be out there.
You don't need to give that warning because typically most people are like, nah, I don't think so.
I'll take a pass. Well, Demetrius, thanks very much. We're glad we finally got a hold of you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Hey, let's keep it old school. Next time, just page me.
That'll
be
great. I'll hit up your beeper. We'll take care. Thanks, Demetrius.
Thank you.
Bye. It's Demetrius Ivory. Let's do this. Then it's news time, WGN. WGN. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Roe will be back on Monday. We're here till 7. After 4 o'clock, we'll talk about some education programs that are going on with the legalization of recreational cannabis. And Ricky Gervais is hosting the Golden Globes again. Oh, he's so controversial. But his take on the First Amendment is very strong. So we'll talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes. Thomas Makatis will join us. He is a professor at DePaul University. He's also a terrorism expert. The terrorism threat now because of what happened in Baghdad yesterday is high. A lot of airports, including O'Hare, are boosting their profile. A lot of new security measures going into place, or heightened security measures going into place, rather. So we will talk all about that. We are waiting to hear from Andy Field because a lot of people, as you heard during the news, both sides of the aisle are commenting on Soleimani's killing last night by the military. Everybody is in agreement that, listen, this is a bad guy. He's got blood on his hands of not only troops but citizens, and now he's gone. But people are questioning whether the president had the right to do this unilaterally without going to Congress. And for that, we welcome in ABC News correspondent Andy Field from Washington. Andy, since we talked yesterday, a lot has happened. Yesterday, we were just talking about the Defense Secretary Esper saying that if there was any trouble, people would be met with a buzzsaw. Well, the buzzsaw dropped last night.
Okay. Yeah, they directed it right at the sky. To answer your question, does the president have the right to do that? Let me put on my law degree here, which I don't have. no, actually, well, we did some research on this, and it appears the presidents do this all the time. The last time, I guess the closest that you could come to this was when President Obama took out Osama bin Laden.
Right.
He didn't notify Congress beforehand. He told them immediately after it was done, but apparently that wasn't even done by the president to members, at least, of the Democratic Party. And we've had wars for years that have gone undeclared, where thousands of Americans have died.
Right.
I mean, look at Vietnam, look at North Korea, look at what's been going on in Afghanistan. Many of those conflicts were not declared wars. They were simply actions the president took, and Congress took up the rear and said, yeah, okay, I guess we're going to go along and give you some money for it, but they were never actually declared. And so the president, at least according to his legal experts, says he was fully in his rights to take this guy out because, according to U.S. intelligence, which oddly the president never believes in it, for other things, but he believed in this case, that he said this guy was planning attacks on Americans and he had to take him out.
And there's no, again, this was the same case yesterday. They didn't give any details on what they may have heard were these proposed attacks, but the intelligence was there, according to the administration, enough to go ahead and do this. And there are reports coming out that this was not a decision that was just made yesterday, that the president and his advisors had been talking about this since Sunday. Defense Secretary Mark Esper and Mike Pompeo were at Mar-a-Lago on Sunday. They laid it out. And then since then, the president has been talking with his legal advisors, along with national security people, to get this in place.
Pentagon officials tell us today that the president had given standing orders that if you got this guy Soleimani in a place where you could take him out, to do so, and they had the order to do that. But it had to be done safely, and it had to be done without at least a minimum of damaging other people. They apparently learned that he was either on his way to the airport or leaving the airport, and that there were other protections for people at the airport, which is why they took him out and I think another high-ranking official in a vehicle as it was leaving with a U.S. drone.
And so a successful military operation, definitely. For those who are just hearing about Soleimani yesterday and today, can you equate him? How big a presence was he?
Well, from anyone who studies Iran, this guy was about as high up as you get in the military. It's like the chairman of our Joint Chiefs of Staff, or if he were a civilian, the Secretary of Defense. That's how big he was when it came to Iran. And this guy was basically the candyman for anyone in Iraq or other places that needed money to support their fighting against American interests in various places. And we're told that he's the guy who funded these militants that attacked the U.S. Embassy on Sunday, among other people. The U.S. claims he is responsible for hundreds, if not thousands, of American deaths and attacks, including an American contractor that the U.S. had retaliated for, which led to this attack on the embassy, which led to the attack on him. And the fear now is that this is going to be an ever-escalating war. We don't know that's going to be the case. In fact, the president got up and spoke today and said he did this to prevent war, not to start a war. And he talked directly to the Iranian people, saying, look, it is in your power. We're not here for regime change. It's your country to run. But if you put a better government in there, things would go a lot better for you guys.
And the U.S. has they've urged all Americans to get out of Iraq immediately. The State Department did close the embassy in Baghdad, and all services there have been suspended. Do we know how long that suspension is going to be? Do they tell anybody, listen, we're closing for a week to kind of let things blow over, or we're closed indefinitely?
Well, you have to. This is hard to imagine, but closing the embassy in Baghdad is not like closing up your summer house and going
no,
home.
I can't imagine. I
mean, this is a giant facility. We're talking 100 acres of land where this facility sits in Baghdad. It is the biggest U.S. embassy on the planet, and it houses quite a few people. And if you remember, when the U.S. came in and got rid of Saddam Hussein, it was the U.S. that basically was running the government there for a while until they got leaders back up on their feet to run it themselves. And that was the seat of government. And now to leave that giant facility empty, which I'm assuming that's what's going to happen, is pretty extraordinary. I mean, you go back and you look that the U.S., as President George W. Bush said, would be greeted as liberators there. We no longer appear to be seen as liberators anywhere in the Middle East.
No, we are not. We will definitely keep an eye on this as the weekend progresses. Andy, it is always great to talk to you. Thanks again for joining us this afternoon. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Brian.
Take care. That's Andy Field, ABC News correspondent. Follow him on Twitter, Andy Field DC. We'll talk to Dr. Thomas R. Makaitis after the news. He is a terrorism expert from DePaul University, so we will talk to him. But first, we will talk to Lauren, because she's going to tell us about weather, traffic, and who knows what else. Brian, in for Roe, 720 WGN. We are talking about the killing of Qasem Soleimani. And joining me now is Dr. Tom Makaitis. He is a professor of history at DePaul University. He also writes about terrorism, counterterrorism, counterinsurgency, peace operations. His latest book, Iraq and the Challenge of Counterinsurgency. Dr. Makaitis, thanks for taking some time. Good to talk to you.
Good afternoon.
Sure. Are we in a more dangerous place now than we were yesterday? I mean, the world was dangerous yesterday. Is the U.S. in a more dangerous position with Iran and the Middle East than we were 24 hours ago?
Yeah, I would say that we are, because what we did was to take a volatile situation and make it less rather than more stable. Look, no one is going to cry in their beer over the death of Soleimani. This was an individual who had done a great deal of evil. Nobody denies that. The real question is, we've known about this, and he's done it over a long period of time. Why now, and does this action in any way, shape, or form add for greater stability? I don't think it does. I think it actually makes things less stable.
Is there ever a good time, though, if Soleimani is as high up and well respected in Iran as he is, and we know that no matter when we take him out, it's going to cause an uproar? What would have, granted, this is a very volatile time, but when is not a volatile time?
Well, the question is, I think it's the wrong question. The question is why we would consider taking out a high-ranking general as the only response to the situation. American contractor was killed. We had a more measured response, although even that was somewhat questionable, in which we hit the militant base, killed 25 of the militia people who appear to have been involved in the attack. Okay, yeah. That's a lot more measured than taking out a high-ranking general at Baghdad Airport. And the thing that people are not really discussing very much is he didn't sneak into Iraq. He landed quite visibly at the airport and was being escorted downtown. Yeah. That suggests that he's a guest, not an invader. We keep talking as though the Iranians are meddling in the affairs of Iraq, but the reality is that for some people in the country, they're quite welcome. And in some other people consider that we're the meddlers.
Now, it was reported the other day that Soleimani was kind of behind the militias that were attacking the embassy the other day. And is that in his M.O.?
Yeah, absolutely. And behind is a little bit, it's a little more complicated than it's being panned, by the White House. He was the leader of the Quds force, which was a unit of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, which was just foreign covert operations group. They're behind a lot of a whole network of militias in the region. They have backed the Houthi rebels in Yemen in that kind of a proxy civil war with Saudi Arabia. They were probably connected to the attack on the oil refinery in Saudi Arabia. They may or may not have been connected to the takedown of the drones. They've got their fingers in a lot of pots. On the other hand, it's not as though the Shia militias in Iraq are unwilling collaborators. Americans keep forgetting Iraq is two-thirds Shia. And the way that some of the actions have taken in the region have kind of pushed them into the arms of Iran. So, we're kind of, reaping what we have sown. I hate to say it, but that doesn't mean I defend Soleimani or, as I said, that I'm going to cry over his demise. He was a bad actor. On the other hand, I'm questioning the wisdom of this particular response when there are other options available.
The justification from the administration and the Defense Department is they know that he was based on intelligence, that he was planning other attacks. So they think that this will stop that. Historically, taking out a figure like that, does that stop future attacks, or does it just amp up the chances of a future attack?
Well, in this case, it amps it up. Look, I mean, with someone like Soleimani on any given day of the week, with or without intelligence, you could have said Soleimani is planning attacks on the West and its allies. And you would be right, because that's a large part of what he did. But this is not an organization that is like ISIS, where what we call a decapitation strike, taking out the leadership, is in fact going to degrade the capability of the organization of the network. I mean, would the loss of an American general of similar rank have a debilitating effect on our ability to conduct operations? You know, there are replacements readily available. We haven't done a thing to weaken the Quds organization or its networks of proxies and associate groups in the region.
What do you think the response will be? Now, we've heard all different kind of things coming out of Iran and Iraq, that it's going to be huge retaliation. Then, no, it's not, you know, we won't say, it's just the U.S. will know. They are going to know. What do you think this will lead to?
Well, I think it's more likely in the scenario of death by a thousand cuts, not that they're going to kill us, but that they're going to engage in a long-term strategy, which is what they're doing. They know they can't take the United States on in a direct military confrontation. They would lose. But what they can do is, we have 5,000 troops in the region. We're now sending 3,000 back. And what we've given them, a target set right there. How many did we lose during the Iraq War? Partly because of this particular leader. But, you know, there are many, many ways to hurt the United States without attacking us in a way that we would clearly defeat them. I mean, the damage done by damaging that oil refinery in September caused the price of fuel to go up in the United States. It's already doing that now with this attack, because they anticipate a potential disruption. So there are lots of ways that they can cause trouble for the United States, and they're not going to do it necessarily tomorrow or the next day. But I think we have to take them at their word. We will know when it happens, and then the question is, what do we do next?
What should the United States be doing now in preparation for this? Is this a wait and see time, and then we respond, or is there something more preemptive that we can do to protect our interests over there?
Well, I mean, I think the really unfortunate thing was that we left the nuclear deal, which was causing all of this to be far less prominent and less of a problem. That, be that as it may, we're going to be able to do what we're doing now. We're ramping up security in the region. The Secretary of State is saying, we hope to de-escalate the situation. And at the same time, the State Department is telling Americans to leave Iraq, don't go to our embassy because it's dangerous, and we're sending 3,000 more troops. So you'll see us on a heightened alert. You'll probably see a heightened naval presence operating in the Persian Gulf, maybe more surveillance operations over Iran, possibly, you know, if there's further acts, there would be attacks on militias and so on. But you saw the response inside Iraq when we hit that particular base. Mm-hmm. There is a fair amount of support, for the Iranians in Iraq and vice versa. I mean, ironically, Iraq used to be the counterweight for Iran. That's what Saddam Hussein was for us. Now, I don't defend him either, but when we took him out and created a power vacuum, it should come as no surprise that his adversary is the one that benefited. The other beneficiaries are going to be China and Russia. Russia is already a de facto ally of Iran and Syria. This is only going to enhance their position in the Middle East at the expense of us.
So what do you think we should be doing domestically? That all good things about protecting our interests in the Middle East, do we need to do that? Do we need to increase things here?
I'm not being flippant, but what I'm saying is, when people ask me what we do to be safer, I tell them not to drink and drive and wear a seatbelt. I mean,
there's nothing else we can do. No, I understand it.
Yeah, I'm being really flippant. I mean, the thing is, look, your chances, you know, the book I just wrote, actually, the new one just came out in June, is on violent extremists, understanding the domestic and international terrorist threat. And, you know, in that book, I say you got a better chance of being eaten by a bear in Yellowstone than you do of being killed in a terrorist attack. Yeah. I can't guarantee something won't happen. I think it's far more likely that an attack will occur in the Middle East. I don't expect to see an uptick in terrorism in the United States. No. It's possible. I'm not going to say it isn't, but it's so much easier and so much less provocative for them to do what they're doing, you know, what they're doing now in the region.
All right.
You know,
Dr. Thomas Mikaitis from DePaul, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much. His latest book, Iraq and the Challenge of Counterinsurgency. Have a great weekend. Thanks very much, doctor.
Yep. You Take too. Care. Bye-bye.
All right, let's do this. Then it's news time from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Roe will be back on Monday. A lot of talk about legalized recreational cannabis this week. I don't know if you've been hearing it. If you haven't been hearing it, I don't know where you've been living. The line's still long, millions still being sent, and people say, well, you know, this is not, some people are saying it's not good. We don't know enough about it. Well, officials are ramping up cannabis education with billboards, which I don't, you know, do we really pay attention to billboards? I guess we do, but I don't want people not to know about their cannabis use till they're driving down the road and go, oh, I should read a billboard.
Yeah, I'm really taking a while to read that paragraph.
That's gonna really help me out. I'm driving by at 60 miles an hour. There's the message, you know, one of those electronic ones where it stays up for like 8 seconds. Well, Lauren, just think, you'll have a lot more to report on during your traffic reports.
Oh, I don't want that.
I don't want it either. People piled up or they're just stopped. They're like, dude, look at the billboard. That's pretty cool. Well, Chicagoans are seeing those messages online and in billboards around the city. Quote, don't consume cannabis if pregnant or breastfeeding. Don't drive while high. Daily cannabis use, particularly in high doses, can impair your memory and has been associated with an increased risk of psychosis. That's a long billboard. If that's on a billboard, I'm going to get through daily cannabis use and I go, are they saying I should do it? What's going on? Then I have to drive back, get off at the next ramp, come back, get on, keep circling, and hope that it's a permanent billboard and not one of these flashing ones. The Department of Public Health began posting these messages last month. I have not seen any. Have you guys seen any of these supposed billboards or online postings?
I have not.
I have not either. I've seen billboards for dispensaries, but I haven't seen billboards telling me not to, you know, warning me about the potential dangers of cannabis.
I guess I honestly don't really notice billboards anymore in general.
You don't?
No.
I didn't know there was such a hatred for billboards.
No, I don't hate them. I think I've gotten so used to it just being in my peripherals. They don't really draw my attention.
Well, here's the thing, and I agree with Lauren, because you can't take your eyes off the road for a second.
Not anymore.
So I have to be,
especially with the construction around here, too.
Yeah, you got to be laser focused on what's in front of you. I wish I could gaze off and, you know, read all these beautiful advertisements. Now, Brian says there's one of them coming northbound on the Ryan. You said whereabouts? Around Garfield. All right. So if you're coming north, on the Ryan at Garfield, you can slow down and read a billboard. But other than that, I haven't seen one. I don't think it's a hatred for billboards, Kevin. I think it's just, you, like Lauren said, you just don't see them anymore. It's got to be something very, something that really grabs me to get me to look up. Because I'm so afraid that the idiot in front of me is on his phone and he's going to hit his brakes for no reason. So I've become not a panicky driver, but a very intense and angry driver.
Yeah, the only ones that really draw my attention will be the ones like heading towards New Buffalo, and they're really glittery.
Yes.
It's like all glitter.
Now, on an open highway, I'm loving the billboards. You start driving out through the Badlands and stuff. I'm reading about Wall Drug. I'm reading every billboard that comes. Oh, look, the Corn Palace. I can't wait. But in the city, no thanks.
Yeah, with the amount of distractions now, I do feel like you have to be laser focused when you're driving. If you let your guard down for a second,
you can't. It's hyper alert. My head's on a swivel, except the only way that the swivel is stuck looking forward. The other night we were driving. And my wife and daughter were admiring all the Christmas lights on these lovely homes. And they're like, look, look, look. I'm like, I can't look. I can't look for a second. Because there's people jumping out. There's a deer on the side of the road. There's other cars that are stopping. You can't do it.
Yeah, I've been taking the train a whole lot more often. It's just so relaxing. For 40 minutes, I don't have to worry about anything. Just kind of post up.
Just gaze out the window.
Gaze out the window.
Take in
the phone,
billboards.
Not worry about anything. Taking all the billboards that I've been missing while I drive.
You're an advertiser's dream.
I'm like, look at that billboard.
Oh, the art on there is fantastic. And the electric ones, that are just, oh, it's going so quickly. Even if you do want to pay attention, you don't really see it. So the Department of Public Health said they felt strongly about having the information out there early. For those who do consume cannabis, health officials suggest starting with low doses. We talked about this yesterday, low and slow, checking the effects before trying more. They say, and I'll believe them, smoking and vaping have almost immediate effects. Edibles can take hours before hitting full force.
Whoa, hours?
Hours seems like a long time. Well,
that makes sense that the caller the other day that he was talking about the four gummies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he took the one, and then he wasn't feeling anything, and he threw another four in his mouth. That seemed really
dangerous.
Dumb. But that's, I don't, like, if I wanted some relaxation, I don't want to schedule it hours in advance. Like, if I want to have a drink, I know that drink is going to affect me right then if I wanted to. It's going to relax me right then. I don't want to take a gummy in hopes that in 2 hours I'll start feeling the effects.
Yeah, I don't see the point there.
Well, yeah, if you're a bigger person, it's going to take more gummies in a longer time. So, just for small people, maybe it hits them right away. Who knows?
Lauren, have you ever taken a gummy?
No.
Yeah, I'm not asking anybody here those questions. I was good at that. I'm like, no, I'm not asking.
No, I mean, that's probably the one thing I would consider to try, because I just don't know how to inhale or smoke. I tried weed before, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I made myself sick because I didn't know how to do it.
I'm laughing. I wouldn't know how to do it either.
I think it's probably a good thing I don't know how to inhale.
Yeah.
Better habit not to know.
Yeah, right. You know how to chew, so if you want a gummy or a brownie or,
right,
you know, something like that,
we'll
you can
see.
Everybody knows how to chew. Well, maybe. But that's that. All right. So just look around. Look for the billboards. Look for the education. It's all out there. The messaging is there in case you want to know. So far, officials have not heard of any unusual spikes in temporary overdoses. That's good. Cannabis-related hospital visits more than doubled after legalization in Colorado. That has not been the case here. So there you go. And the Illinois law that allows the sales also required the State Department of Human Services to launch this public awareness effort. So that is why we're doing it. After we talk to Lauren, Ricky Gervais says offense is the collateral damage of free speech. Do you agree? We will talk about it. 312-981-7200. But now we will hear from Lauren, and not about inhaling, not about edibles. We will hear about weather and traffic.
The Catholic Church are furious about the film as it exposes the fact that 5% of all their priests have repeatedly molested children and been allowed to continue to work without punishment. Roman Polanski called it the best date movie ever.
That is Ricky Gervais from the 2016 Golden Globe Awards. He is coming back to host the Golden Globes again this Sunday. Some people very excited, myself included. Other people, not so much, because if you're a fan of Ricky Gervais, you know that he really holds nothing sacred. He goes after everything and everybody. He does not show fawning fake respect to the Hollywood elite. He goes on and skewers them, and kind of he likens himself to the kid selling the emperor they have no clothes. He doesn't believe that you should be able to just live in your ivory tower without having rocks thrown at it. So he just gave an interview with the Hollywood Reporter because it is his fifth time hosting the Golden Globes. And, you know, after the last couple times, he would the Hollywood Foreign Press and other people, he should never host again. He was so mean. He made Caitlyn Jenner jokes. He made jokes about the Catholic Church. He did all of this. And then he tweeted that he tweeted something about a trans person, and people got all upset out of that. And he said, I'm just making fun of this guy who is actually Jarvis DuPont, who is actually a woman in real life. And this is the problem. You can say, listen, I was joking. It's a joke. But that's not always enough for some people. And then he goes on to say, and this, I think, is an important point, and I'm wondering how much you agree with this or not, that he says offense is the collateral damage of free speech. That if we're going to talk about things, we need to be able to realize we're going to get offended. If you're joking about a subject, people think that you're anti it as opposed to pro it. I've tried to explain this in Humanity, one of his specials. It's an occupational hazard of being outspoken. I think offense is the collateral damage of free speech, and it's no reason not to have free speech. That's why I'd say it's the lesser of two evils. Having free speech and some people getting upset by it is the lesser of two evils, because not having free speech is horrendous. I don't know how you could argue with that. Now, there's some, listen, and most of the time, and I know humor is very subjective. So there are going to be people, when I say this, who disagree because they'll say, well, Ricky Gervais isn't funny. And I think if a joke is funny, it's okay. And we don't have a right not to be offended. But for some reason, everybody thinks we do. We think we have the right to go through life without being offended. I know I've been offended by things. That's just how it goes. I know I've probably offended people with things I've said, but that's how it goes. Would you want to give up free speech in order not to be offended? Kevin, do you want to live in that kind of world where you're wrapped in figurative bubble wrap so that nobody ever offends you or you don't feel triggered at any moment?
It's a big no for me, Brian.
All right, good. I would hope it would be the same for Lauren, but I don't want to put words in her mouth. Lauren?
No, I totally agree.
Yeah, this is, especially with the business we're in. You know, you can't worry that somebody's going to be offended. I mean, there's a difference between going out of your way to be offensive. And some people do that. And just going about your life and telling a joke and it offending somebody. You know, and I've had this for years when I was doing stand-up. I don't set out to offend somebody with a joke, but it happens. Well, I'm sorry. And people come up and they're all belligerent. Well, you said that, and it's my sister, or my brother, or my dad, or somebody had this and this and this. Well, okay. One, I'm sorry about that. Two, I don't know, you know, I don't know you. I wasn't, this joke was not targeted at you. And for people to get upset, and also it's people who the joke isn't about that also get upset. People got upset at Ricky Gervais for Catholic Church jokes. Well, if you're a Catholic and you listen to his jokes, you might not find the facts that he joked about funny, but you can find the joke funny.
To say, I'm sure there's Catholics who have made similar jokes.
Of course there are.
Closed doors. Beers.
And I think outside of closed doors, and present company may be included, because yeah. You know, I know I have.
You know, I think for me, it's definitely, I don't know if the time where we're at is everybody is more sensitive, but because of social media, people have platforms and things can get amplified. But I think it's not what you say, it's how you say it. I mean, sometimes you can tell somebody is trying to offend someone or they make it personal. You know, I always say just don't make it personal.
Well,
it's not a personal attack on anyone. It's poking fun at a particular topic.
And the forum and the setting, to your point, Kevin, is the if you're doing a comedy monologue at an award show, that's, you know, take it for where the comment is being made. Yeah. You know, this is supposed to be a joke. Whether you think it's funny or not is not the point. Because what I think is hilarious, you might think is god-awful, and vice versa.
And that's a comic's prerogative. They know that they're going to have backlash from some, but that's what they are accepting by being in their position as well.
Yes, and that's, and especially a guy like Ricky Gervais, whose entire career has been about that. It's not like he was some family-friendly prop comic, and then all of a sudden one day decided he was going to take this stance to poke holes in propriety. He's always been the guy who was calling out what he believed was either hypocrisy or pomposity or anything else. That's his stock in trade. It's been his style forever.
You know, Dave Chappelle's newest stand-up on Netflix, I think it came out a couple months now.
Yeah.
That offended some people, but he gets everybody. Black, white,
yes.
Gay, every single person. I think it's one of the best stand-ups I've ever seen. Of course, there were some people who were offended by it, but I've watched it multiple times. The whole idea of sticks and stones is that's their words.
Yes.
You know what I mean? This is not personal attacks on anybody. And I think just about everybody understands what we're saying, and I think a lot of people listening are probably nodding their heads in agreement, because it has become a society where it's who got offended, who offended them, how offended are they, what do we do now? Where I don't think it's the society is as sensitive as it may appear.
I think it
comes off that way a little bit more on social media, and people have platforms and people weaponize it and use it to express their outrage.
Well, that's exactly
it. More of a, like, their problem, not the person making the joke's problem,
and
or the person saying something.
And it's also a lot of times not the person who the joke is about. Dave Chappelle was a good example that you brought up, Kevin. He talked about how he got a lot of flack for a joke he made about transsexuals. And then he also then talked about one of the people that he joked about calling him and supporting him and going out out on stage with him and doing all sorts of stuff. So it was the social media, the politically correct police that are, as you said, weaponizing, but they, you know, now everybody can, everybody has a platform, and those platforms are amplified.
Right.
So we're hearing it, like you said, we are hearing it a lot more. Let's see, from the 773, we're living in a beige society. You can't express an opinion anymore, and you can't make a joke anymore. America has lost its sense of humor. I'm Polish, and I enjoy a good Polish joke.
Lauren, you got any good Polish jokes for him?
Lauren and I are
Polish.
No. Yeah, no. Lauren's in there.
Over a beer once. We'll get some Polish jokes. In.
She can't make a joke now. She's in there changing a light bulb. But so thank you, Kevin, for the most sarcastic ha-ha ever. But that's the point. Is he's right? If you want to have free speech, you're going to be offended. And where I don't know where along the line we all got the idea that we didn't have to be offended.
I think it's just people on social media ruining it.
I don't
get played alternate universe.
It's not always social media, because I'll be honest. Again, sometimes it's I use my own life as examples, but I see my daughter, who is very, very funny in her own right, get offended by fairly innocuous jokes. And it's I think it's just sometimes it's a generational thing. Sometimes it's an environmental thing where I'm like, wait a minute. You grew up with me. You know how I joke around. This is not, and then my wife will step in and go, that was not offensive. See, so, you know, you got to slow down. From the 630, I don't understand why people take everything personally. It's so annoying. Why can't we just laugh? It's healthy. And it is. And listen, I don't want to say that there are people who make horrible comments and then mask it in, oh, I was just joking. No, you weren't. It's obvious. That comment you made was not a joke. You know, you weren't, even if you were on stage, you can tell the difference. You can, and now can somebody legitimately be trying to make a joke and fail miserably? Yeah, and that's a dangerous thing. So I, you know, I'm always conscientious about, even when I'm with friends, it's like, oh, I think this might be funny. And I, but there could be, it could go south on me pretty quick. So
but
in
like
that
Kevin
case, I'll shut my mouth.
A lot of times delivery says it all, because sometimes it's really just for the shock and awe that everyone knows, oh, like, you know, those, ooh,
yes,
that was kind of bad, ha, ha, ha kind of moments.
Right. There's some are, it's just like, oh, man, there's no reason for that. That just was not, that was not funny at all. I get offended with, a word about somebody who is mentally challenged. It hurts my daughter's feelings. She has Down syndrome. And those are the kind of words that, you know, maybe 20 years ago, people threw around.
Right, and that's just being tone deaf.
Right,
like, there are
exactly
some words that are just so obsolete that I think everybody could agree that some, it's like, what is, why are you using,
right, that? And at this point, if you're still using some of those words, you can make the same jokes without the offensive words and without targeting somebody, you know? And you hear about comics should not, don't punch down. Comics don't punch. Comics just make fun of everything. And Ricky Gervais is a comic. Do you think the media has a lot to do with amplifying things? From the 501? I will say, yes, I think the media should take some responsibility, because we, and I mean this in the big picture, sometimes latch on to a story and give it more press than it really should get. And then that just, the culture then just keeps perpetrating. And
classic war on the media continues.
Listen, I'm throwing it down right here. Classic war. All right. Hey, we have a little surprise for Kevin and Lauren.
Ooh.
On the other. Yes, on the other side of the news. So we'll get.
Is it food?
It's a surprise.
Okay.
It's a surprise, Mr. Impatient Johnson. I can't tell you, because then it ruins the surprise, doesn't it? That takes a whole thing. Whole word surprise is gone. Well, you'll find out,
okay.
And you'll find out after the news, which comes your way now on WGN. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Oh, we're coming back with the bump. I don't know anymore. Sometimes we got music, sometimes we don't. I'm very excited to just live in a surprising world where I don't know what's happening. But I know what is not a surprise. Roe will be back on Monday at 3 o'clock. That is set in stone, so you'll be listening. Also, because it is Friday on the Roe Con Show, the Carnarble Wagon will roll at 5:30. Richard Roper will be here at 6 to talk a little bit about the best and worst movies. Oh, you could take one of these. Best and worst movies of 2019. And we will talk a little Blackhawks after at 6:30 with Nick Gismondi. So that is it. I'm wondering if some food items can bring you back to childhood. Now, we have delivered the surprise. I told Kevin and Lauren we had a little surprise for them. They have Pop-Tarts. Nice, toasty, hot Pop-Tarts. Lauren, I'm sorry these were done in a toaster, a conventional toaster. That's all we had on hand.
Hey, I'm okay with that with the Pop-Tarts. The only thing I'm not okay with is the lack of frosting on my strawberry versus the other one.
Well, and Kevin, I must apologize. We tried to get you unfrosted Pop-Tarts. Now, Kim and Brian, there are Pop-Tarts. If you would like a frosted strawberry or a brown sugar cinnamon, you are more than welcome. Just let Ashley know. We'll heat them up for you. They're good to go. But this brings me back to childhood. But like I was saying, Kevin, We tried to get the plain ones.
That's okay.
I know this is very sweet for you, and you have an issue with too much sweetness. But did you?
Yeah.
Do you feel does it feel indulgent and childlike all at the same time?
A little bit, yeah. And I mean, because the whole idea of it is ridiculous. It's like, okay, here's a cake for breakfast.
Exactly. I love it. It's sugary. It's you know, well, there's fruit in it. No, that's just sugar filled jelly. That's not really fruit. This is because now. Did you, were you able to compare? Because yesterday there was a lot of consternation between which was the best. I'm still going with frosted strawberry is the best.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the go-to for a lot of people. I like the frosted one, okay. But I'd probably go unfrosted.
You still like the unfrosted. Now, Ashley claimed that that they didn't have any unfrosted ones, or she didn't see it, whatever it is. But we want to thank Ashley for running down. I thought she was going to CVS just to get a... one of those Michael Jackson SARS masks because Brian might be highly contagious in the booth. But she was going, and I said, well, you know, want to bring back some Pop-Tarts? I wouldn't have sent her. I told her that because she was like, do you want me to go get Pop-Tarts? I was like, no. And then she was going to get a couple other things at CVS. And I was like, all right, well, since you're already going, here's some money, buy some Pop-Tarts. Because for some reason I had a taste for a Pop-Tart after talking about him yesterday, and I figured you guys would too.
Oh, yeah.
There's certain things that you ate as a child that just brings it back. Like these are one, and then something I loved as a kid, and I haven't had it in years, but SpaghettiOs.
Oh, yeah.
Like spaghetti with the meatballs.
Like eating dog food, Brian.
Well, SpaghettiOs almost brings me more back to college because I used to eat them all the time in college. But
yes.
They're not as kid. I'm not going to go as far as dog food. They're as good as what you remember as a kid.
Oh no! If I want pasta now, my go-to is not in a can. But there was just something, and I would imagine if I ate it now, it would not go as well. When Molly was a little kid, she would have every once in a while SpaghettiOs with meatballs, and I'd take a couple spoonfuls, and I'd go, "Oh yeah, they're you know." A spoonful or two brings back those nice memories. If I went home tonight and my wife had decided, hey, don't worry about dinner, I'm making dinner, and I was like, oh, this will be great, and I go home and there's a steaming bowl of SpaghettiOs with meatballs in front of me, I'd be like, oh, well, this is a unique pick.
Ashley, SpaghettiOs run?
She's on the phone now. Maybe she's calling out to Grubhub.
I was going to try to get
DoorDash delivery of SpaghettiOs. Now, yeah, I always went meatballs. I know some people like the plain. I didn't know anybody who liked the ones with the fake hot dogs in them.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's just not the canned meatballs are any better.
Weenies?
Is that what it was?
Or is that hot dogs and beans?
That's they're two different things. SpaghettiOs had
hot dog slices.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, SpaghettiOs had. Well, Kim, obviously. Obviously, Kim did not eat
the SpaghettiO.
No, I don't. What about a nice Chef Boyardee ravioli in a can?
I'm okay with that.
You would eat that, but what?
Or mac and cheese.
But what made one canned pasta superior to another canned pasta?
I just don't like. I'm not a big meat person, so okay. You know.
Well, they had the plain ones too.
Yeah, I could have stomached the
could have stomached plain ones. I'm like Kevin though. It did. There was after late college and the year after, there were a lot of SpaghettiOs and like Wonder Bread.
Yeah, there's always someone who like
ramen noodles.
Put it in the microwave and for too long, and it stunk up the entire dormitory floor.
That just goes to bad community microwave courtesy. You know, that's bad etiquette. Yeah, it's like somebody who brings fish into work for the communal microwave. Don't mind me. I'm just going to, you know, this tripe has to, or that's not fish.
Or
this
let me heat up this potato. It takes 30 minutes.
Yeah. Right. And everybody gets the same lunch break. I see that when I would go to schools and, you know, you go into the teacher's lounge and they have one microwave that works and one that maybe works some of the time. And so, you know, everybody's lined up with their lean cuisines or whatever. And somebody comes in, like Lauren said, this is going to take me about 7 minutes. Oh, we only have 30 minutes. Why are you doing this?
Kind of want SpaghettiOs now.
Wow. Now, see, now this is what you got to do. Next week, have Ro bring in some SpaghettiOs. Brian will tell Jeff, and you guys will
the
have
last person buying SpaghettiOs is Ro Khan.
I don't know.
I don't see Ro going to the grocery store for SpaghettiOs.
I don't see it either, but that would be the ultimate Ro living on the DL. He projects this this image of a very refined gentleman, and yet when nobody's around, he's eating pasta out of a can. Not because he has to, because he wants to.
I just like to picture him wandering the aisles of Whole Foods for like SpaghettiOs. I don't think they sell them there, but I don't know. You know all those fancy stores that don't have some of those really basic foods?
Go to a Trader Joe's, you can't get SpaghettiOs.
Right.
But I see, this would be the ultimate. He doesn't bring in name brand SpaghettiOs. He went to Aldi and got the off brand SpaghettiOs.
Ooh.
SpaghettiOs with treat balls. And that's, he's like, here, eat up. This is the same kind of thing. This is what you guys were talking about, right? And you're like, no, this isn't anything at all what we were talking about. Why don't you bring in some generic cereal, too? That would be that'd be terrific. Frosted Flocks. All right, on the other side of the news, the Navy Pier Winter Wonderfest is doing something very, very special. If you are a parent of a child with special needs, and they've got some other new programs going on, so we're going to find out all about that on the other side. But first, now that she has finished her Pop-Tart, we will find out what's happening in the weather and the traffic with Lauren. If you are not done with the holidays and you wish that it could be extended a little more, well, you are in luck. All you need to do is head over to Navy Pier, because the 19th annual 5th Third Bank Winter Wonderfest is going on until January 12th. And they have some very exciting things coming up in the next week or so. To share those with us is the Navy Pier Communications Specialist, Anna Shapiro. Anna, welcome. We're glad you're here. Thanks for taking some time.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Happy New Year. How has the Winter Wonderfest been going so far this year?
It's going really well. We've seen tons of guests, lots of locals throughout December. We opened early December, so December 6th. So it's been going for almost a month now. And then over the holidays is definitely a huge time. Locals, and then obviously just tourists coming from the Midwest or international travelers. So it's been really great.
Now, what was new this year? And for people who have been waiting and think, oh, I missed it. You haven't missed it. Like I said, Winter Wonderfest goes through January 12th. What was the big changes this year, or were there any big changes this year?
Yeah, so as you said, there weren't tons of big changes. It was a lot of returning favorites that everyone is familiar with, like the Xfinity ice skating rink, tons of holiday decorations, lots of fun rides. But we did have one new ride, which was the big, exciting new thing this year. So it's called the Wind Chill, and it's more of an exciting, thrill-seeking ride. It goes up almost to the top of Festival Hall, so It goes over 50 feet in the air. It just kind of goes in like a circular motion. So that one is definitely the draw for people that have, you know, maybe been to Winter Wonderfest in the past and are like, oh, I'm familiar with it. I'm not sure if I want to come back. But we did offer that new ride. So it's pretty fun. I've been on it a bunch of times.
It sounds fun.
Recommend that. And then, yeah, you touched on, we are open through mid-January, so if it's a family and you're like, ugh, the holidays are over, kind of heading into that slower winter blues phase, you can just come to Navy Pier and get into the holiday spirit through mid-January, so it's a lot of fun.
Now, this is something that I found very exciting, because there are some families who they would like to come, but maybe one or more of their children has some sort of a sensory issue, whether they have autism or some other instance. And Winter Wonderfest is coming up with some sensory-friendly hours, which I think are fantastic. Explain what those are.
Yes. So it's our second year of offering sensory-friendly hours. So this year it's going to be Thursday, January 9th from 4 to 8 p.m. And so what we do is, just as you mentioned, create more of an experience that's accessible and exclusive for special needs, particularly children with autism. So we reduce the lighting and sounds. There are quiet zones and other just special signage and other tailored items to create just more of an inclusive experience for those children and their families who might not be able to come on other days. And we also offer discounted tickets for these. So when you go to navypeer.org and purchase our tickets online, if you input Thursday, January 9th, and then you'll be able to select sensory-friendly hours from 4 to 8, and the tickets are $10, no matter what your age is.
Oh, that's great. And there's also an app that goes along with that, correct?
Yeah, so we partnered with subject matter expert. It's a mission-driven technology company called Infiniteach, and what they do is they create apps for businesses and organizations to just help them be more inclusive and accessible. So the app is available on the App Store, and it's called Sensory Friendly Navy Pier. So we recommend, if you're visiting for Sensory Friendly Hours, to download the app in advance, and you're able to get a sense of Navy Pier and just plan your visit accordingly.
I would imagine it was all positive, but what kind of feedback did you get last year that made you decide this is something that we need to continue?
Exactly. So just with the event's nature of just being so many lights and so many sounds and so many rides, we just really realized, since this is family-friendly, we want to be inclusive for everyone. We need to bring this back. And as you mentioned, just from social media, people reaching out on the Navy Pier app or other message boards that special needs groups in the area have, we have gotten such positive feedback that it's obviously been great for families with children with special needs, but that if maybe one of your children has autism but the others don't, that it's super fun for everyone too.
That is excellent. And again, that is January 9th from 4 to 8. If you go to navypeer.org to buy your tickets, they are discounted, but those aren't the only days that people can get discounted tickets.
Yes. So for the last week of Winter Wonderfest, January 6th through the final day, January 12th, we're offering discounted four packs. So they are running for $79, and those tickets will go on sale Sunday, January 5th. So this is up to more than a $30 discount if you're buying four tickets for adults on any given day. So depending on your age range and who you want to come with, it's a really great deal.
Wow. And those discount days start next Monday, the 6th. They run through this Monday, the 6th, run through the 12th. Tickets go on sale on Sunday for that. And the sensory-friendly hours, again, Thursday, January 9th from 4 to 8. Would you recommend that people buy those tickets in advance? Is that the best way to make sure you get the discount? And is there a capacity limit or something that we need to worry about?
I don't foresee a capacity issue. Festival Hall is really, really big, so not concerned really about capacity, but definitely recommend just purchasing them online so you have them in advance and are able to just get there and have it be a smooth process when you arrive.
Now, I don't know, you'd know this, Anna, somebody texted in, is parking reduced or still hourly during Winter Wonderfest?
Parking is not reduced at Winter Wonderfest, unfortunately, so it's just based on how long you're there.
Yeah, that's fine. If somebody wants to know, we'll give them the information. People should go ahead, sorry. Yeah.
If you're not interested in parking, we do have a lot of rideshare and taxi zones, and then we also offer various CTA buses. So if public transportation is an option, that could work too.
And it is easy to get to Navy Pier. Everybody knows where Navy Pier is. Huge night the other night with the fireworks, and now Winter Wonderfest going on for another week through January 12th. NavyPier.org to get all the information, to find out where everything is, to get your tickets, to find out all the big things. Once Winter Wonderfest is over, what's the next big event that Navy Pier is going to be sponsoring?
So we have about 2 weeks off, and then on January 25th, we're kicking off our Global Connection series. So this is a three-part cultural celebration series. So we'll be celebrating Chinese New Year on January 25th.
Sounds fantastic. And again, people can get all the details on that at NavyPier.org. Again, once again, the sensory-friendly hours for Winter Wonderfest, January 9th from 4 to 8 p.m. Discounted tickets. Discount tickets for everybody all next week to Winter Wonderfest. Those go on sale on Sunday. So make sure you go to NavyPier.org. Anna, thanks very much. Happy New Year. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Take care. There you go. Hey, guess what? I'm going to give something away. What do you think of that? You ready, Ashley? You ready to start answering the phones? Give me a number. What number caller do you want to answer? Number 11? Is that 11 or 2? It's 11? All right. Holding up hands. That finger was very, I wasn't sure what message you were trying to send me. But that's all right. What do you have to give away, Brian? What are you teasing us with? Are you going to give everybody Pop-Tarts? No, just Lauren and Kevin and Kim and Brian and Ashley get Pop-Tarts. You don't get Pop-Tarts. You get a family four-pack of Don't call now. They don't even know what they're getting. Clear. People are very greedy. They're waiting. They're waiting for a prize. You're going to get a family four-pack of passes to the Lake Home and Cabin Show this January 10th through the 12th. But you have to answer this question. What are Lauren and my favorite Pop-Tart? Ashley knows the answer because she went and bought them. If you were listening closely, you know what the favorite Pop-Tart is. 11th caller, if you could name it, you get this family four-pack of passes to the Lake Home and Cabin Show, which is January 10th through the 12th at the Schaumburg Convention Center. It's Chicagoland's only show specializing in vacation homes and the second home lifestyle. Plan your visit to lakehomeandcabinshow.com, that family four-pack, if you're the 11th caller and you know Lauren and my favorite Pop-Tart. Very exciting question. What a contest.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
That opening always yelling at me. Feel a lot of pressure. It is the top five at five. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Roe will be back on Monday, but that doesn't mean the top five at five stops just because Roe is vacationing. Perhaps rumor has it shopping for generic SpaghettiOs. That's what we're hearing. I don't know if that's true. You can find out on Monday, but let's get things started, shall we?
Number five.
President Trump told the nation that he authorized the military strike that killed the leader of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. As he and his entourage were leaving Baghdad airport, President Trump vowed to kill all terrorists who want to harm Americans.
If Americans anywhere are threatened, we have all of those targets already fully identified, and I am ready and prepared to take whatever action is necessary. And that in particular refers to Iran. Under my leadership, we have destroyed the ISIS territorial caliphate. And recently, American Special Operations Forces killed the terrorist leader known as al-Baghdadi. The world is a safer place without these monsters. America will always pursue the interests of good people, great souls, while seeking peace, harmony, and friendship with all of the nations of the world.
Yeah, and the president also saying he did not order this strike to start a war. He ordered it to prevent a war. So we will we'll see. They're going to be upset, but we can't allow American targets to be held hostage. So we will see how this all falls out. But overall, there's nobody who's really saying, yeah, this guy was a good guy. He really shouldn't have been taken out. No. Universally, we know he was, as they say, a bad actor, and now he is no longer.
Number four.
This was a crazy story yesterday, and it got even crazier today. An autopsy is going to be conducted for a man who died in a confrontation with Chicago police yesterday after a traffic stop in the Belmont Central neighborhood yesterday. Initially, Chicago police said the man suffered from a potential self-inflicted gunshot wound, but overnight, the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office contradicted that by saying the cause of death for 30-year-old Mariano Ocon Jr. has not been determined. According to Chicago Police spokesperson Anthony Guglielmi, 25th District officers performed a traffic stop in the 600 block of West Wellington just before 12:30 p.m. Police said the driver of the Mercury apparently swerved onto grass, striking a stop sign and minivan. Suspect hopped out of the car, leaving a woman and children inside. Police said officers chased him and then fired shots when they say they saw a gun. The man's brother, Juan Ocon, is questioning the police chase.
Since that we're pursuing him with his kids in the car, what kind of police is this? Endangering the kids, even if he was armed or not. What's wrong with these cops? Well, listen, I don't know because I wasn't there, but if he did, that was the wrong way to go out. And another thing, these people are going to cover it up with a lot of whipped cream on it. This 25th district is corrupt. This ain't the first time the media's here for 25th district. It's not going to be the first time. It's not going to be the second time. And it's not going to be the last time. These motherfuckers are worse than the mafia. Straight up, man. And I know it because I ran the streets when I was young. And these people right here, all they do is corrupt people. That's what they do. Where's all these unsolved murders they haven't solved, huh? And they're going to be here trying to solve a murder? Huh? They got cameras. Put them to work. Do your investigation.
But I understand him being very upset. His brother was just killed, either at his own hands or by the police's hands. But you know, there are cameras. They are going to do the investigation. Things will come out. It's unusual that the coroner would say that the medical examiner would say that it was undetermined. But that just means more investigation is needed, and I'm sure that will be done. It's very sad. Very sad incident all the way around, especially for those kids that were in the car and had to witness that. And the initial reports were that it was the children's mother. So that part is horrible. The whole story is horrible. We'll keep an eye on it, and I'm sure we will hear more and more as it goes on. I had never heard things being covered up with whipped cream, though. That was interesting.
Number three.
Well, it's all going to pot. Whether we like it or not, best I can tell, the world's gone to hell. We're sure gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg.
The patron saint of cannabis. The redheaded stranger, Mr. Willie Nelson. The only person more identified with pot, Snoop Dogg. And those two are friends, and you've heard stories of Snoop and Willie enjoying themselves. Why did we play Willie Nelson going to pot? Well, the state of Illinois is reporting high marijuana sales for the first day of legalization. The Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation says more than 77,000 transactions netted nearly $3.2 million in marijuana product sales on the first day of legal cannabis in the state.
Where do you get high?
Here are some chocolate edibles.
Going to enjoy this in the privacy of my space.
Wow. Right on. Illinois is the 11th state to legalize recreational sales. Even Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton made a purchase.
Clementine orange or clementine orange gummies.
And are you going to partake?
Well, I might try one. It's legal in Illinois.
That was very evasive. I think the answer to that was, as soon as I get away from your cameras, I'm going to get down. We're going to have some fun. Yesterday was another key day for the recreational marijuana industry in Illinois. It was the last day to turn in an application for one of the 75 available new dispensary licenses. Applications were due by 4 p.m. Toy Hutchinson, Illinois' cannabis czar, says there's plenty of room for growth.
So those lines actually show that there's an incredible opportunity to grow this industry. There's new room. There's room for new people to come in. We'll spend the next few weeks going through those applications so that we hopefully will have an industry that looks very different than the way it does anywhere else, frankly, in the world. So having said that, we know that the world is watching, and this takes intention and time and work.
Right on. The world is watching. I don't know if the world's watching, but everybody in the state is watching, and the other states that do not have legalized cannabis are probably watching as well. We will continue the top five at five, but first, we must hear about the weather and the traffic. Here's Lauren.
WGN.
All right, let's continue the top five at five. If you were counting backwards like I was, then you know that we are on
Number two.
The official trailer for A Quiet Place 2. Oh, dropped featuring the return of Emily Blunt's Evelyn, fighting off more than just monsters this time. now left to lead her three children through the wilderness alone following the death of her husband in the first film.
Spoiler alert.
I guess, yeah.
No, I didn't see it yet.
Didn't see it yet either.
Listen, blame Brian.
It's okay.
Brian typed this. When did Quiet Place come out? It's funny because as I was reading that first sentence, I was thinking, did the husband die in the first one? I can't remember. Well, now I remember. And I saw it. When did it come out, Brian? Do you feel responsible?
Now, April of 2018.
2018.
It's a year and a half. It's our fault, not Brian.
Yeah,
Brian's sick. He's working hard.
He is working hard. And let me say this, just a blanket statement, not directed at you two in particular. If you haven't seen a movie in a year and a half, tough luck if somebody spoils it for you. That's the way it goes. You know, Citizen Kane, it was a sled. Rosebud was a sled. There, I ruined that too. If you haven't seen that in 60 years, 70 years, well, you're out of luck. That's right. Forrest Gump. Jenny dies. That's right. Enjoy it. You didn't see Citizen Kane, Brian? Ah, well, listen, I can't help it. You should have taken a film class in college. That would have worked out. That would have worked out better. All right, anyway, the husband's dead from the first film. Kevin and Lauren, now I've just saved you 2 hours. Now you know how it ends. Just go to the second one. Also, they don't talk in the first one. Did that spoil it for you?
Oh, now I know what movie we're
get
talking
it? About. Yeah. All right, where am I? Oh, they set off traps. Set by a new character played by Cillian Murphy, who is reluctant to help them.
I don't know why he came all the way up here. There's nothing left.
Please. There are people out there worth saving.
You don't know, do you? I do. The people that are left are not the kind of people worth saving.
The husband's not left, that's for sure. He died.
No, the husband died in the first movie. That's what I heard. Right now, people everywhere are very upset that we keep spoiling it. Why do they keep spoiling it? I missed it the first time they spoiled it. Now they spoiled it again. So they are talking in this movie. They're whispering. That was the problem I had with A Quiet Place. If you're not talking, there's a good chance I'm sleeping. Because there weren't a lot of explosions or things to keep my interest. So I kept dozing off, which is probably why I can't remember that John Krasinski died in the first one.
I would imagine it's quite annoying if you're watching at home and you're like, I can't hear it. Turn it up. Turn it up. And if there is any loud music or bang, all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, my ears.
Yeah, it blows out your speakers. You're like, oh. But well, now we've saved it. You guys, there's a movie you don't have to see.
I'm still going to see it.
All right.
Because it's supposed to be outstanding.
You're going to see the first one? First one was really good. Make sure you have coffee.
I'll see the first one first.
Go see. Well, sure, if you want to do it that way.
Despite you ruining it for me.
Well, that's what I do. I ruin things for people. Just ask my wife and daughter. They've been doing that for a long, long... No, that's okay. Bring up the painful memories. That's all right. We'll just move on to...
Number one.
I'm past patiently waiting. I'm passionately smashing every expectation. Every action's an act of creation. I'm laughing in the face of casualties and sorrow. For the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow.
And I am not throwing my shot.
Before I read this, has everybody seen Hamilton?
I actually just saw it.
Did you? All right.
I haven't seen it.
It's about a...
Who dies in this one?
Hamilton.
Spoiler.
Yes, spoiler. I spoiled 200 years of history for Kevin right now. Get used to it. Don't throw away your last shot to see Hamilton in Chicago, the hit musical about founding father Alexander Hamilton is closing its record-breaking run after a final show Sunday. Chicago was the first city outside New York where Hamilton opened, and Lin-Manuel Miranda's Tony Award-winning musical has been playing here for 3 years. It has been seen by about 2.6 million people, and after Sunday, the show will have played 1,341 times in Chicago. When the announcement was made, fans camped out for hours to be among the first at the box office windows in late June of 2016 when tickets went on sale. It has made a huge economic impact on Chicago and on the show's lead, Miguel Cervantes, who has said it's been a dream come true.
It was, you know, a dream come true, a dream that I never really knew I had, a dream that I didn't really understand at the time when it all kind of happened. And so it's hard to believe it's been so long, you know. I will miss this terribly. I will always, no matter what happens next, you know, no matter what the next thing is, whatever it is, this will be my Hamilton. This will be my, you know, the one thing that I will, I don't know, be remembered for, you know, if there's a legacy that is left in my professional career, I am happy that it's this one and it was here, and that, you know, somewhere down the line, somebody may see me one day and say, oh, man, you were the guy in Hamilton in Chicago. And I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, it was. So you just saw it, Lauren. What did you think?
I thought it was phenomenal.
Lived up to all the hype, didn't
it? Oh, absolutely. It's a very unique piece of art.
Yes, it was. I remember when those tickets went on sale. It was when my daughter is the one who turned me on to this, because before I had ever heard of the play, she was like, you got to listen to this soundtrack, this Hamilton. And I was like, what is Hamilton? So like Schoolhouse Rock going to teach me about the Founding Fathers. Started listening to the soundtrack and really enjoyed it. And then she was in school at the time and called us and was like, Hamilton tickets are going to sell. We got to get Hamilton tickets. And I had been hearing these stories about people paying thousands of dollars in New York to go and see the show. And I was like, we don't have that kind of money. Well, we'll try. You know, they're going on sale in June, and it's, you know, we'll all be at the thing. So I was on a computer, my wife was on a computer, and my daughter was on a computer the day they went on sale, and it was insane. We got them, and it actually just came up on my Facebook memories today that it was 3 years ago today that we went to see Hamilton. Yeah, it was phenomenal. So you didn't see it, huh, Kevin?
I did not.
No desire, or just you couldn't get tickets? You have connections?
Yeah. I had some interest in seeing it, but not enough to, like, you know, put it front and center top of my to-do list. But yeah, I wish I saw it.
It's one of those shows that if you like theater, and if you don't like theater,
yeah, I'm not a big theater guy, then but everybody have no was still raving about it. I would have went if I had an opportunity, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't on my to-do list, but no, everyone says it was pretty outstanding.
I actually learned some things, which is kind of sad that I had to have a hip-hop musical teach me a little bit about history. But no matter how you learn it, you still learn it. And it brought in almost $400 million to Chicago. So the economic impact, as we said in the story, was definitely huge, between hotel rooms and restaurants and ticket sales and merch and everything else that went along with it. It'll be a long time, I think, before we see another show come to town that does that.
Had a good run.
It definitely had a good run. So Hamilton, closing Sunday at the CIBC Theater.
The Top 5 at 5.
That's it. That's the end of the Top 5 at 5. Roll will do it for you again on Monday. Just real quick, speaking of theater, I like to, on my the old Sunday show, and sometimes I do what we call the bow tie theater reviews, because every time I go to the theater, I wear a bow tie. And I had the opportunity to go see Mean Girls last week when it opened.
Oh, don't spoil it for me. I'm going Tuesday.
Well, what am I going to spoil it? I'm just telling you, it's good. You're going to love it.
Okay, good.
Did you see the movie?
I did.
Then if you saw the movie, you're going to really like it. One of our staff members here had not seen the movie and was thrown off at one point by a particular plot point in the film. I won't tell you what plot point that is, but it was a lot of fun. It runs through January 26th at the Niederlander Theater, formerly the Oriental Theater, a gorgeous, probably, for my money, one of the most beautiful theaters I've ever been in. Cadillac Palace, a very, very close second. But the cast is hilarious. The Plastics, as you know, the young ladies who are the bane of the high school, are all wonderful. The lead is great. It's a show that I think if you've seen the movie and loved it, you're going to love the show. If you haven't seen the movie, you'll still go. If you're a man, you're going to be very glad that you were never a high school girl. That was what I felt that way during when I saw the movie when it first came out, and I really felt that way seeing the show. I was like, man, if there's a sliver of truth in this, the girls had a rough time in high school. Some of them. Not the Plastics. They seemed to have it all together. Everything was fine for them. And the woman who plays the teacher doing the Tina Fey role was fantastic. That is, I don't want to say the wrong name, but the whole cast was just wonderful. So, Kim, you will enjoy it.
I can't wait.
Yes, I don't blame you. Kevin, any interest in seeing Mean Girls?
I'm going to pass.
Other than the ones that Lauren are going to help you find when she's your wingwoman. So.
Phenomenal wingwoman.
Yeah, that's what we've heard. Now, do you like the Mean Girl concept, or do you not the play, but do you like a more friendly woman, or do you want the Mean Girl?
Oh, yes, for me. I thought you were asking Lauren about
the Mean Girl. No, I'm asking
you.
Oh. I'm asking you, Kevin.
No, I don't want a Mean Girl.
All right, I don't know what you're
and
into.
And if Lauren's
man.
That good, she won't find him a Mean Girl.
Oh, no.
Right, Lauren will scope it out.
She'll have to deal with me if she's mean to Kevin.
Yeah, you can sense that, Lauren, as part of your wing woman.
I would say I'm a really good people
Reader, so yeah.
People reader?
People
very
reader.
Yeah.
I'd say women can sense that out pretty quickly, don't you think, Lauren?
Yeah, oh yeah, because it's how they react to you as the wing woman.
Oh, okay. So that's, well, that makes a lot of
that's
sense.
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Kevin.
I was going to say, because recently I was like, you know, and then my sister's like, no, definitely not. I'm like, what? Why? So I guess your women can sniff it out.
I think that because they're so used to having to deal with it on their own.
Yeah. Firsthand.
Knarba Wagon is going to roll when? Right after the news, after this on WGN.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm going to get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot.
Great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it, I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Man, to paraphrase Lloyd Bridges in Airplane, I picked the wrong month to quit drinking. It is the Knarba Wagon. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Roe will be back with you on Monday, and I am very happy to welcome in Kyle Bagley. He is the one of the owners of the Greystone Tavern and Rambler. Greystone Tavern is in Wrigleyville. Rambler is in North Center. Kyle, thanks for coming in. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, too. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I just heard you guys just ended a very popular Hanukkah pop-up.
Yeah,
that was at Greystone.
Greystone Tavern. That's correct.
So what goes in? Because pop ups are everywhere. What, obviously the Hanukkah one is going to be unique, which is great. I've seen the coverage of that because I saw on some news channel. I saw all the decorations
and
everything.
Crazy.
What made you go with that? Just
we dare to be different.
I love it.
Yeah.
So what was the response?
It was remarkable. The response was amazing. We couldn't have predicted anything like it.
Really?
Yeah, people were lining up. We had a line out the door.
That's nice. So, and I'm sure you came up with the special drinks for that, just like
yes,
we've
we did.
Got some special, the drinks you were going to talk about today are for special thing. What is it about The Bachelor that makes The Rambler and Greystone Tavern say, we need to host some Bachelor watch parties and create some fancy drinks to go with it?
Well, I don't know if you've ever watched The Bachelor.
I have not.
But it helps to...
Incredible drama.
Is it?
Yeah. The more you drink, the more fun it is.
I know honestly. There's a rose involved and there's some ladies.
Roses. There's plenty of roses involved.
And a dude.
There's a dude and many dudettes.
Yes.
And
a hot
they're
tub?
Trying to find the hot tub. They're trying to find true love. True love, the old-fashioned
really?
Way.
Really? Is that what they're
that's
trying
That's what
to?
I think, yes.
Lauren, you scoff. Is that the way to find true love?
Apparently, these days. That's probably why I'm single.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll
we'll
do
submit you
call.
To potentially with, yeah. appear
no,
on the...
God.
It's
yeah.
pretty incredible what pop-ups do for bars. Like,
oh, they're so fun.
They're fun. I'm convinced everything in the world now it revolves around Instagram, mm-hmm. so it's perfect
yes.
for the Instagram.
That's the truth.
There's a bar I go to, and it's normally like not that packed. And last time I went to it a couple weeks ago, it was like a tropical Christmas theme. The place was
Surfing Santa,
absolutely jam packed.
Is that in Arlington Heights?
Yes,
that's. I went to that Surfing Santa pop up bar.
Yes, very.
I got
fun.
the little ceramic Santa surfing
yeah.
mug. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
When did this whole pop-up thing start?
In Wrigleyville specifically, I think it was 2 years ago. Somebody had the bright idea of bringing more business to the neighborhood, and people saw how popular it was for those few bars mm-hmm. that did it. And pretty much everybody jumped on the bandwagon this year, and it was really terrific for the neighborhood. It seemed like we were a tourist destination, you know.
Very nice.
And it's nice when the Cubs aren't the drivers of it.
Exactly.
So for us, it was really terrific. And the fact that we were able to do something so distinct and different with the Hanukkah pop-up bar, you know, that was really cool for us.
Very nice. Now, the other owner of Greystone Tavern and Rambler is here too, Sam Stone. How did you guys get into this? What's your background? Give us a little history.
He used to sell me booze. And then we figured out we like to consume booze together. So we figured it was a match made in heaven. And next thing you know, 6 years later, here we are with two spots.
Which came first?
Greystone was is the baby. We opened that in 2015.
And that, again, is in Wrigleyville on
Sheffield? In Wrigleyville, 3441 North Sheffield Avenue.
All right. So let's get to the reason we have glasses filled with colorful and fancy concoctions. It looks like Cindy Lou Who put her strawberry on top of one of them, which is lovely. So this is all in conjunction with what I mentioned before. You guys are hosting these Bachelor Watch Parties.
Bachelor Watch Parties. You got to come and see it. We're giving away prizes. We're doing Bachelor Bingo, which makes it really, really interesting during the entire time the show's going on.
Bingo. How does that go down?
You
crying, some kind of fight.
If you pick crying or somebody storms off, and when that happens, which it inevitably does.
It's a real connection.
It's truly. It's remarkable. It makes you believe in the thing called love.
Sure it does.
When you watch this show.
That is so smart, though, because even though all my friends know I do not watch this show, I make fun of this show, I get invited to dozens of Bachelor watch parties, and it's always about drafting for the Bachelorette or Bachelor or playing games like Bingo. So I've never actually heard of a place or a bar to go to watch outside of your own home.
Yeah, you gotta check it out. Well, it's fun for me, and I'm a 51-year-old single man, you know? And
When's the next one? What's the Bachelor schedule? We should go check it out.
Starts January 6th.
Oh, okay.
Monday.
Oh, wow.
Monday at 7.
7 p.m.
I might be there Monday.
You have to, because then you're in for, you get a raffle ticket, and you're ready for the grand prize.
What's the grand prize?
The grand prize is a double magnum of Prosecco.
Nice.
Oh. Yeah.
So well, there you go, Kev. You can meet a girl and then save that when you bring her back home.
Yeah, make mimosas for the next day.
When you have a gallon of booze.
It's making love happen.
That's right.
I thought you were going to leave off the happen. But anyway, let's get to the beverages, because people can come in now. They come for this Bachelor Watch Party every Monday, starting this Monday at 7 o'clock, and they can order one of the Bachelor signature drinks. So which one do you want to start with?
Which one would you like
to start
with?
I really like that this one has a pinwheel.
It's got a pinwheel. And there's somewhat of a story behind it. If you're familiar with The Bachelor, which some people are, you'll understand it's called the Wild Windmill Spritz. And there's a backstory. What Pete did in the windmill with last season's Bachelorette.
Was that Hannah?
You got me there.
I see her everywhere. I just know she's a media person. Well, she's on every talk show.
I hope you didn't see her in the windmill.
Wow.
Yeah, so we thought it would be clever to include that in it, and this is it's pretty fantastic. It has strawberry liqueur and Prosecco and a splash of club soda.
This is perfect for the people on the White Claw right now. It's got that
it looks
bubbly,
very light.
Mm-hmm, bubbly, very light, very fresh feeling.
Kevin, what do you think? Is that up your alley, buddy?
Not really, but that's good.
Not really, but he slugged half of it in the first.
I'm going to drink the whole thing.
Yeah.
No, it's good, for sure.
I love the garnish. I love the pinwheel. I love the big strawberry. And it looks like one of those drinks that, as Lauren said, if you don't want to get bogged down in something heavy, it looks refreshing. Like you could have that watch at the Bachelor Watch Party and then have it at brunch. And then have it on the beach. You could pretty much have it anywhere you want it.
That's right.
The windmill.
So that is the Wild Windmill Spritz.
That is the Wild Windmill Spritzer, yes.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Kyle Bagley, one of the owners of the Greystone Tavern and the Rambler. You can go to RamblerChicago.com or GreystoneTavernChicago.com to get all the information. The Bachelor viewing parties start this Monday at 7. We have a couple more drinks to talk about. We'll do that after Lauren puts down her windmill and gives us a look at weather and traffic. We are back. The Carnarvon wagon is rolling. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Kevin and Laura are in enjoying some cocktails with Kyle Bagley, one of the owners of the Greystone Tavern and the Rambler. Greystone Tavern is in Wrigleyville on Sheffield, and a Rambler is in North Central. What's the address for the Rambler?
4128.
There we go. Sorry. Go ahead.
4128 North Lincoln Avenue.
4128 North Lincoln. So we're talking about these specialty drinks because they have Bachelor Watch Parties. Kevin already reserved a table at both places trying to hedge his bets.
That's right.
First half he'll be at the Greystone. Then he's going to shoot over Rambler for the Rose Ceremony.
Absolutely.
Maybe he will enjoy. We've already seen heard about the Wild Windmill Spritz, which
That's
looks
right.
light. And now this next one looks... looks like decadent. And it looks delicious.
It's really lovely, and it tastes as good as it looks.
It's pink and dandy, and what is it?
It's pink and dandy. It's our fantasy sweet martini.
Ooh.
The fantasy sweet.
Fantasy sweet.
Fantasy sweet martini. Wow. And it's all booze.
I heard, even with the headphones, I heard, ooh.
It tastes exactly how it looks. It's the martini glass, and it's just a bright pink drink with a, what's on the rim of the glass?
That is powdered sugar.
Of course it is.
Okay, that makes sense, because all of a sudden, I was like, oh, I'm thinking of a carnival, but as a 21-year-old in a liquid form.
Yeah. It does look like cotton. That's what I was, it looks like cotton candy.
It's like cotton candy, but then the powdered sugar from like a funnel cake. Good, yeah, that's funnel. A really good positive memory taste right there.
Well, what is in the fantasy sweet martini?
Fantasy, it has Mozart, white chocolate, cream, strawberry liqueur, Wheatley vodka, white cream de coco, obviously the powdered sugar rim, which we discussed about, and we put a beautiful fresh strawberry as a garnish.
Wow.
This is a dumb question for a guy who doesn't watch The Bachelor. I love the strawberries on both of these. Is there a connection with strawberries in The Bachelor, Lauren?
No, it's as close as we could get to putting a rose on it.
Oh. So there you go. Good thinking. Smart. Yeah, move. Edible garnish is always good.
That's true.
Those are fine looking strawberries too.
They
I'm not gonna lie to you. Those, like I said, Cindy Lou Who, giant strawberries that just got plopped on the rim.
What's the typical crowd you're getting for these Bachelor bingos?
It's you know, you would think it would be primarily women, but it's surprising how many boyfriends tag along.
Really?
And guys like me that went in almost as a novelty, and it, with the bingo, it is really a lot of fun.
It's,
you know, you're just waiting for the train wreck to happen, you know, and inevitably
it always
does. Please, you know, and but man, it's just a lot of fun. So we get just about everybody coming checking it out.
And is this the future of bars and restaurants where you? Obviously, you're always trying to get a new audience. You're always trying to get new patrons. So you got to keep doing events like this.
You got
to
be fresh. You know, it's like you can't just serve a shot and a beer anymore. Right. You know, you have to have excellent food paired with excellent cocktails, and your ambiance has to be, you know, it can't smell like mushrooms like it used to. You know? And you know, you have to clean your bathrooms and do things that we got away with
for years.
A lot of work nowadays.
Right, you actually have to do stuff.
But the experience is so much greater, you know, when we do things, and it keeps everything fresh. And you know, Chicago, we want to be on the cutting edge anyway, you know, and the more things we can do and push the envelope and try new things, the happier we are to do them.
Very nice. Now, you brought one last drink. I've noticed Kevin and Lauren have they passed on this one because it is a mocktail.
Mocktail.
We know in January, a lot of people are doing dry January, myself included. And so when we talked to you guys, we're like, hey, do you have it? Oh, yeah, we've got something like that.
You sent
a different name, but I like the new name that you've come up with since I
on the way here, we decided that it's the ingredients are green tea, fresh honey, lemon, cloves, and a cinnamon stick. And it has a lot of the components of a hot toddy.
Yes.
But since there's no booze in it, we are going to call it the hot noddy.
I love it. And it's, I am enjoying it. It tastes really good. Brian, who is very sick, we said, you got to try this one because it's tea and honey and cinnamon. And he was like, yeah. He just said it's doing wonders for his throat.
Look at him. He's doing sit-ups and
enjoyable
jumping jacks in there. It's crazy.
And medicinal, which is, that's a nice combination.
We healed him.
Plus, you come in, you drink one of these, Kevin, you're on the ball a little more.
That's
you know
point.
when you're trying to give the rose to some of these bachelorettes, they're all liquored up on the fantasy sweet martini.
That's
or the
right.
Wild windmill spritz, and you can say, ladies, and you can speak to them in a coherent manner rather than go, hey, it's something else.
Right. That's a good call. The hot toddy is pretty special. Last year, I had to take off 2 days of work because I lost my voice. Actually, January 2nd and 3rd. And I'm like, anything I was trying was not working. I drank a hot toddy, and I'm like, back. Oh, I'm like, let's get back on the radio. Here we go.
No, so this is very good. And do you find, there's been a lot of studies, do you find people coming in during this month and maybe next month that are saying, hey, do you have some other options for
us? Yeah, I think, you know, it seems like No Booze January is picking up steam. You know, we were discussing earlier that it seems like October is another month people are taking off, you know. So we still have to find something for them to enjoy, too, you know. So we're keeping our eye on the prize.
There you go. So what? Now, we've talked about these wonderful drinks that go with the Bachelor viewing parties, which start Monday night at 7 o'clock at both Greystone Tavern and Rambler. Let's talk about what food. You mentioned you can't just have bar food anymore. So not you can't just throw some greasy potato skins on a plate and expect people to come rolling in.
Well, I mean, I still roll in for greasy potato skins, you know.
I got nothing against greasy potato skins, but some people's pinkies are out. They want something a little different.
We offer some lighter fare at both places. We have avocado toast, which appeals to people looking for healthier options. Our salads are terrific. We have a goat cheese strawberry salad. Seems like strawberries are the theme.
Yeah.
But our sandwiches are second to none. Greystone, we feature really, really unique tacos that you're not going to find really anywhere else. We have a fried chicken taco that has a macaroni and cheese base. Mm. We do a wonderful French dip at Rambler. We do... Our Rambler burger is something to behold.
Really?
Oh, my goodness.
What makes it so good?
The TLC, I'm pretty sure, and the fact that it's red meat, cheese, and sautéed onions.
That sounds good. And, all three of those ingredients are fantastic.
We have a secret sauce, too, you know, that we can't reveal to you today.
How important is it to make each place unique?
I think it's really important because, you know, we're not McDonald's. We're not Ray Kroc by any stretch, you know. So, and also it keeps it fun for us.
Man.
You know, we try to utilize some of the same systems to make things replicable, you know. But we want each of our properties to be unique and stand by themselves on their own.
So if I enjoy one of these, I can get these special drinks at both places.
That's
for
correct.
The bachelor viewing parties, mm-hmm. right? All three of these, between the Hot Noddy, the Fantasy Sweet Martini, and the Wild Windmill Spritz. Very nice.
Yeah, you can enjoy them at either spot.
All right. Now, I don't know. Do you take reservations? Is it a walk-up? Can people, people are going to be crowding in?
Come online and make a reservation online. We'll take care of you, as many as we can.
All right. And this starts all on Monday. So now Monday, we know Mondays are going to be very busy.
Mondays
you got a lot of stuff going on. What are some of the other things that happen throughout the week?
We do trivia at both places through What Do You Know Trivia. We do Tuesday trivia at Greystone, Thursday at Rambler, Game Watches. We're a Chelsea bar, so we feature all the Chelsea matches at Greystone Tavern.
And if you want to find out everything, you can go to GreystoneTavernChicago.com or TheRamblerChicago.com. Get all the information there. Don't forget, go on Mondays. Enjoy one of these fine cocktails during the Bachelor Watch Party. Kyle, good to meet you. Thanks for
coming in. Thanks for having us.
These guys are definitely enjoying the drinks, and Brian and I are savoring our hot noddies. So have a wonderful weekend, and good luck on Monday.
Thanks so much.
All right. We'll give you a rose if you're lucky. Let's do this. Then it's news time. It's WGN. It's Brian Noonan in for Roe. Roe will be back with you on Monday. Very exciting. First time this new year, Richard Roper is joining us. Hello, Rich. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everyone.
It is good to see you.
Good to see you.
Did you enjoy your holidays?
Absolutely. Fantastic holidays, and excited to get back in the screening room and the streaming room and all the other rooms.
Do they give you a break over the holidays?
There's a little bit of a break, maybe about a week or so. But then you get, you know, right around just after Christmas, you know, the January 3rd and January 10th and January 17th releases. I've got screenings scheduled for March. I hope I can make it. It never ends.
Well,
and it's awesome.
And we've got the Golden Globes coming up Sunday.
Yeah.
And then Oscar season will kick off. Oh, my God. It's going to be
crazy. Everything's compressed this year, Brian. So, like as you mentioned, the Golden Globes are Sunday. The Oscar nominations are a week from Monday.
Okay.
And then the Oscars themselves are only a month away. They're early February. They used to be all the way back late March, early April. So now they kind of compressed all the seasons, which I like.
Too many award shows.
Exactly. And that's why the Oscars have done that, because by the time they got around to handing out their Oscars, everyone's like, well, we know that was going to win because it won everything else.
Exactly. All right. Well, where should we start? Let's look back a little bit, even though we
looked
a little bit. Because some of the movies that you have said are the best movies of 2019, people could still go out and see. They don't have to wait to stream them.
Yes.
They don't have to wait to rent them. They're out there. And one of the one that I wanted to ask you about, well, the first one on your list is The Irishman.
Yes.
Now, as I was reading your piece, you said, listen, people are very concerned about the running time, which I am because, you know, my attention span is very short.
Yes.
It's 3.5 hours.
It's funny because people who just got done watching the Frito-Lay Bowl, the Toasted Flakes Bowl, and the Idaho Potato Bowl back-to-back-to-back-to-back for 12 hours say, I can't sit still for 3 hours, 3.5 hours.
If it was at the theater, I would have no problem because I can focus at the theater. At home, there's too much going on.
Well,
but I should focus.
This is why a lot of people thought they should have broken it up into like 3 1-hour episodes, and then people would just binge watch it and not realize they sat still. You know, I've heard from people over the holidays, like, you know, I just don't know if I can commit to The Irishman. I did spend 14 hours watching every season of BoJack Horseman without going to the bathroom. I kept a jar next to my bed for when I had to do bodily functions, but I just can't commit.
I told you that in conference.
Listen to yourself. Yes, I'm sorry about that. Well, just, you know, the great thing is if you do have Netflix and you want to watch it, you can give yourself the break.
That's true.
At an hour, Brian. You can say, intermission, and everybody can get up and stretch their legs, and then you can get back to it.
But it's definitely, it's as good as the hype.
It's a great film. Yeah, it's a great film.
Everybody's talking about. What else should people search out before they're gone?
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's just arriving in theaters in Chicago because it was released at the very, very end of 2019, so it would be eligible for the Oscars. Okay. So there's a movie called 1917, which is about World War One, which is brilliant.
I've heard great things about that. A great film.
Little Women, and I know people go, oh gosh, Little Women, we've seen like 8 different versions. But trust me, this is a fresh take on it. It's really strong. It should get Oscar nominations. That's, you know, just now arriving in theaters. So there's a lot of stuff at the theaters right now for folks as well. Yeah.
My wife and daughter went, they are backing up your review. They went on Wednesday to see Little Women, and they loved it.
Excellent. And it takes a real man to see Little Women. I can't believe in this day and age, there are some men go, oh, I don't know if I can see that. But they'll go see Rambo Last Blood, which is 97 minutes of dripping garbage on screen, and somehow feel like that's more manly. Have enough confidence in who you are to see a movie about strong women, which, by the way, has some pretty cool dude characters in it as well. Grow up, people.
Wow. The opinions expressed by Richard Roper.
That's the blurb. Grow up, people, Richard Roper.
That's why I let it breathe for a little bit. I wanted that to settle in.
Isolate that, baby.
That's not something you talk at right away. I have to ask you about this one because it's on your list of the best movies of 2019. I know nothing about it, and not to be all hoity-toity, but I got my SAG screener of Parasite.
Yes.
What is it? Why is it on your best list?
Parasite is a really cool... It's a Korean film. It's going to win Best Foreign Language Film, but I think it could also get nominated for Best Picture. And it's about this family, a working-class family, that figure out a way to kind of con an entire other family, and then the con game goes super sideways. So I don't want to say it's like Get Out, other than to say that things happen about halfway through this movie that you do not see coming.
Okay.
And it's crazy, and it's violent, and it's funny, and it's haunting, and it's brilliant.
Subtitled?
Yes, you're going to have to read. And again, for the same people.
I'm just asking, because people will know I know how to read, contrary to popular opinion.
There's subtitles? And I'm like, yes, there's going to be some reading involved. There's going to be some female characters, and you're going to have to read.
Or find someone who speaks Korean, and they could just translate it for you. That would be fun. I'm going to start. Maybe I'll put an ad out in the paper.
I like when you're clicking around the cable channels and some movie's on, and then 3 channels down, it's on in Spanish.
Yes.
So it's like The Irishman, except for everyone speaking in Spanish. Fantastic. Not subtitles, just dubbed.
In Spanish. Yeah. And then it's fun to sit there and go, how much of this do I understand?
Yeah.
The answer? Not much, unfortunately. Not much at all. So what overall was 2019 a good year for movies?
A very strong year. And, you know, the other thing, too, we talk about this a lot, Brian, in addition to all the great movies that are out, almost every week there's a really top-level streaming series.
Yes.
Because now, in addition to Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, we have Disney Plus. We have Apple Plus. The Mandalorian was the most streamed show of 2019. Lauren's a big fan.
Amazing.
Yeah. And it was great because, you know, I think you agree, Lauren, every single episode looked like a legitimate 45-minute feature film. The quality.
The features were phenomenal for a TV series, especially when you're not really expecting much,
exactly.
But you're hoping deep down it will look the same. I wasn't disappointed at all.
Is that good for the industry to have all these outlets? I mean, it gets movies like The Irishman made and gives them...
I know the theater owners, you know, get upset sometimes because movies like The Irishman don't play in theaters for the normal 72 days that they do usually before going to streaming. But you look at all these shows, like The Morning Show from Apple TV Plus, which has, you know, Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston and Steve Carell. The writing there, that's something that's never going to get made as a feature film. So some of our best actors, writers, you know, directors like David Fincher are now doing episodic television.
And that Eddie Murphy, Dolomite Is My Name.
Dolomite Is My Name.
That was a lot of fun.
And Eddie Murphy, who I thought killed on Saturday Night Live, is now going to have a stand-up special on Netflix, you know, coming up shortly.
Yeah, that was a nice line when he and Chappelle and everybody were up there and they said, this is half of Netflix budget right there. And that was definitely true. All right, Richard Roper is here. On the other side, we're going to talk about some of the movies that you should be looking forward to. You Great. Should plug this. I hear you and a guy who usually sits here have a podcast
we do.
Regarding some of these movies. We'll we talk do. About that. And maybe we'll get a chance to look a little ahead to the Golden Globes.
Great.
All of that coming up. But first, Lauren wants to share weather and traffic with us.
Hey, Trocon, Happy New Year. We here at the Afternoon Show are sufficiently rested and ready. See you back here Monday afternoon at 3.
For news at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN. Richard Roper is in the studio. Kevin and Lauren are here. We were talking about the best movies of 2019, but let's look forward, because you had a great piece in the Sun-Times the other day.
Thanks.
About the 20 movies that you're looking forward to in the next year. Now, that's the. It sounds like a podcast title or something.
It almost is. In fact, it is. It's a 20 for 20, and everybody gets to say 2020 a million times. Get it out of your systems and get your roaring 20s jokes out there of your you systems. Go. We'll move on. So Rokan and I have done our latest podcast on the 20 movies I'm most looking forward to seeing in 2020. You can get them at the Sun-Times website, Apple Podcasts, wherever fine podcasts are heard.
Very nice. Some of these look, I don't blame you, but what in the soon-to-be future? What are the ones you're looking forward to?
Every once in a while, it's something that at first you go, oh my God, that's going to be horrible. And then you see the trailer and hear about it. So, for example, in February, we're going to get the movie version of Fantasy Island. Now, everyone remembers of a certain age, or you've seen it, Duplane, Fantasy Island, Mr. Rourke, and Tattoo.
Welcome.
People would land on the island. It was basically a love boat on an island, yes. And you'd have your greatest fantasy come yes. true. Michael Pena, who's from Chicago originally, okay. a fine character actor, is going to play the new Mr. Rourke. But the twist on this is, it's almost like, it looks like an episode of Lost, a very dark episode of Lost. You land on Fantasy Island, you get one wish. People think that it's really just kind of a wish fulfillment, like I'd like to get revenge on the person who always bullied me in school.
Yeah.
And they go, wow, that's a very realistic hologram of my enemy. And then they realize that might not be a hologram, and the stakes are really that high. And it's kind of a game of Survivor, except for if you don't survive, you really don't survive. So I think that might actually be kind of interesting.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
What they're going to do with that. And another local twist movie is Candyman. Now, people might remember in the early 1990s, yes. there was a horror movie called Candyman. It was set in the Cabrini-Green Projects. It was kind of an urban legend, but also a commentary on urban life. And they're remaking Jordan Peele, who does Get Out and many other things.
Yeah, he does an all right job with those kind of movies.
What I love about this, Brian, is it's a sequel. In fact, Tony Todd, the original Candyman, is going to come back. But it also is set in present-day Chicago in the gentrified neighborhood where Cabrini Green once was, which may or may not help real estate prices. Yeah. I don't know. Again, this is fiction. So if you got a lovely condo there right by the park,
don't panic.
Near the Jewel, you're okay.
I'm not going to that Target anymore.
But that looks really promising.
All right,
well.
So those sound good. One that I think it's the first one that's coming out. Birds of Prey. Now, I watched that the Joker movie and the Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad
was not good.
It was not good. And this is where it gets a little confusing, too, because Suicide Squad was Margot Robbie plays Harley Quinn.
Right.
And it was a PG version of her, PG-13 version of it. And the Joker in that movie was Jared Leto. Remember, there had been all this buzz about Jared Leto, and then he only got about four lines
right,
in the movie.
Exactly.
So in the sequel, she used to date the Joker, but she didn't date Joaquin Joker. Or Jared Leto Joker is the guy that she did date. She never dated the Jack Nicholson Joker because that's age inappropriate.
Or Cesar Romero
or the Heath Ledger. He's out of it. It's all her story. But they're kind of redoing it. It's R-rated, so it's supposed to be a little bit closer to the comics on which the Harley Quinn character is based. And Margot Robbie's a terrific actress. She's great. She's in Bombshell, another movie that's out right now. I did not think she had her best work in the Suicide Squad, so it'll be interesting to see if she kind of recalibrates the character.
And the other heroes, quote unquote, they're all villains. There's a lot of
anti-hero.
Okay,
Who's the villain? Who's the hero? And in the meantime, Jared Leto gets another crack later on this year in Morbius, where he plays an anti-hero, sort of villain, vampire. But that's not related to any of these superhero characters. And Scarlett Johansson, who's Black Widow, we said goodbye to in Avengers Endgame, returns because she's going to be in the prequel.
Yes. Well,
you need a chart. Lauren's keeping her chart of superhero movies over there.
I was rewatching some the other day to try and go back and mentally put it all together again. It's not easy.
No, and I saw the trailer for Black Widow when I was reading your piece, and I watched it, and I was under the impression that the Black Widow had been like an orphan at this place where she was trained. Now it doesn't appear that way.
Well, there's the Romanoff family, and they seem like a fun bunch.
Yeah, the dad is trying to squeeze into some sort of super suit, which seems odd.
Well, it's interesting, though, too, because we are going to get a pause. You know, Avengers Endgame was the end game for that story arc, and the Black Panther sequel and some of the other ones are a year or two down the line. We are going to get, on the DC Comics side, Wonder Woman 1984, which is the long-awaited sequel to the Wonder Woman, which is a huge hit, in which Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman returns in the year
1984.
Yes.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I loved the first film. I thought it was really well done and strong. And I thought Patty Jenkins, who directed it, who's returning for this one, you know, did a great movie that happened to be about a burgeoning superhero, not a superhero movie. I mean, the World War I stuff, Chris Pine stuff, that was all shot like a realistic war film.
Yes. Now, at some point during the summer, Rich, you know me well enough to know that every once in a while I do feel the need for speed. Now, for a long time I have not been able to fulfill that need, but I think my dry spell is going to end.
You are correct. We're going to get the Maverick Top Gun sequel 34 years down the road. You know, it's interesting because when you go back and see that movie, the one thing that 1986 Top Gun was famous for was every dad back in the day who had the cool sound system put the laser disc on and made everybody come downstairs, check this out, for the opening
the
sequence
jets,
with the planes and the jets
man.
And everything. Anyway, it's an entertaining movie. It's pretty cheesy.
Unbelievably cheesy.
It's, you know, these guys are macho jerks most of the time.
Did a lot for shirtless volleyball, though.
Yeah, it did a lot for shirtless volleyball. And, you know, you lost that loving feeling. A lot of that stuff is a little cringeworthy. It'll be interesting to see how it plays, you know, with now Maverick. He's still a Maverick. He's still in the Navy after all these years, but he's only like a captain, where he should have been an admiral.
I was going to say, that's not
And Iceman, Val Kilmer's Iceman is back as well.
Really? So these guys, and now, as it gets closer, you will get to see these. Are you anticipating this one with the bated breath?
Yeah, I'm gonna go find Kelly McGillis, who wasn't asked back because Hollywood's too sexist to have someone who's the same age as Tom Cruise return as his love interest. Maybe go see it with her. I am looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah,
I mean,
it'll probably be
good. It's summer popcorn fun sometimes, Brian.
All right, now there was a big controversy earlier because in the top five at five we mentioned that The Quiet Place 2 is coming.
Yes,
Kevin and Lauren accused me of spoiling it because it came out that John Krasinski died in the first one.
Yes.
Well, now A Quiet Place 2 is back.
Yes.
And they should have just, A Quiet Place 2, now we're really quiet.
Yeah, keep it down in the next room. Yes, and sorry, folks, if you haven't seen it, he did die in the first one, but he was a family man, and they're in this universe where you can't make a sound because these creatures that can't see but can hear everything will kill you. But Emily Blunt, who is his wife in real life and his wife in the movie, returned with the two actors who were the children. So it's their story continuing on.
Okay.
And, you know, John Krasinski said he did not want to make a sequel to The Quiet Place because he thought it was self-contained.
Yeah.
Unless they came up with a concept that would blow away the first film.
Oh.
So go see
that first one so it can be blown away.
Yeah.
Even though it's been spoiled for you.
That's okay.
Go and see it. Enough of the theaters, because a lot of us don't like to leave the house for whatever reason. I want to stay in my house, and I want to watch things on television.
Yes.
And I can stream it, as you said earlier. I could stream on a million different platforms.
True.
What's coming that I should be excited about where I'm excited, one, because I'm not leaving, and two, because I'm watching quality programming?
Well, I know Kev is excited about the return of Very Cavalieri in season 3.
Oh, God. What happened?
Which premieres, I believe, January 10th. I've had a chance to look at the opening episode. And, again, spoiler alert, you know, they live in Nashville, and Uncommon James, you know, K-Cav's store, is doing so well, she has to choose between Chicago and Dallas for the second store.
Oh, boy.
Given that we've seen the store open here in Chicago.
Every news outlet was at the opening.
So we're gonna see all that. And then the evolution of Jay starts to grow a neck beard
he's evolving into Kyle Orton.
Yeah, possibly.
That might be devolving.
And his status as a Bears quarterback keeps growing every time Mitch takes the field.
Yeah, so. An overthrow.
You know, maybe he wasn't as bad as we thought.
And he's in the gym a couple of times here talking about how he still thinks he could do it. So you never know. So that's kind of your guilty pleasure.
Okay.
You know, watching on the quality side, the first I think great streaming series of 2020 is coming out on HBO. I'll have a full review in a couple of weeks. But Stephen King wrote a novel called The Outsider.
Yeah.
It's been turned into a 10-part limited series on HBO. I've seen the first six episodes, and it is great.
Really?
Jason Bateman stars in this. This is a story of a family man, Little League coach, greatest guy in the world, who gets arrested at the Little League game for the brutal murder of a neighborhood boy. And quickly, there's DNA evidence. There's all kinds of eyewitnesses who say he did it. On the other hand, there are just as many people who say they saw him 80 miles away at the conference he was attending for writers, and there's video of him there as well. How could he be in two places
at
once?
That doesn't seem possible.
It is in Stephen King's world. All that's right. All I'm going to say about
Fair
that.
Fair enough.
All the theories you all just thought of, that's not what it is. Really well done, and scary as...
Really? Yeah. All right. So that, and I think that's January 12th, right? That
yeah,
that
comes the first week, second HBO? Weekend. I keep saying the first weekend. This is the first
this
weekend
is the
of
first
January.
Weekend.
So this is all of this stuff is coming the first full week.
Okay.
In January.
Very nice. Now let's talk about the Golden Globes. I'm excited that Ricky Gervais is back.
Me too.
You excited about that?
I think it's nonsense that the Oscars and other shows have said they're so afraid to have a host that they're going hostless.
Please.
And Ricky Gervais is the classic choice to say not only are we going to have a host, he's going to say something offensive. He usually brings a cocktail on stage, and he pokes fun at the people who should have fun poked at them. So it'll be interesting.
You can't be talking about the Hollywood elite.
Yes, the people in the audience there who are getting drunk. It will be kind of interesting, too, because, we've got all the serious stuff happening. Is someone going to go up there and make a political speech, talk about, international events? I think most actors have learned the hard way that it's best to just say thank you for the award, that no one's really, really waiting for your geopolitical insight on whatever is happening in the world today.
Especially
but you never know.
You've had a few cocktails.
Yeah. The ribbon should be for nobody to go overboard with their acceptance speeches. The 90-second ribbon.
And that's why I like the Golden Globes, because it's usually a little more lighthearted.
It definitely
people
is.
Are drinking.
And there's a chance for certain films, because they have the two categories of drama and then comedy and or musical, so certain films that'll win won't win an Oscar. So, right. So for example, for whatever reason we were talking about, for
yes,
Once,
I was
once
just
Upon a Time in Hollywood is up
this.
For comedy and or musical. It might win in that category. Might win Best Picture in the Oscars, but, it's probably going to win
comedy.
For sure. Now, well, yeah, no. And there's the only music is Neil Diamond on the car radio in that movie.
Does it work? Now, all right, since we talked about that, you've got Dolomite Is My Name, Jojo Rabbit, Knives Out, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Rocket Man.
Rocket Man's the only one in there that could be considered something of a musical. By the way. But that's actually a very strong category. All five of those films are worth checking out.
Jojo Rabbit's one that... when it came out, it killed at the festivals, critical darling. How did it do with the general public?
It did okay. I mean, it was never going to be a big hit.
Sure.
This is a movie about a 10-year-old boy who has Hitler as an imaginary friend. But it's a satire of Hitler and, dictators. It's a great film. The Hollywood Foreign Press is kind of a hinky bunch. It's like 90 critics. They might love it. You never know.
It could
win.
Could pull an upset.
I always tell people when they're handicapping or doing pools and outside of the U.S., you can actually bet on the Golden Globes. Go for the long shots. Go for the Brits.
Always. Irishman, Marriage Story, 1917, Joker, Two Popes. Who do you think wins?
I think Irishman wins.
Irishman wins. Should it win?
Yes.
Okay.
It's one of the great films of the decade.
Very nice.
And the acceptance speech can be 3.5 hours for the Irishman.
Perfect. That's lovely. Good to see you. Happy
Good
New
to
Year.
See you. Happy New Year, everyone.
People can find the podcast with you and Roe where?
Just Google Roper Podcast. Go to Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Podcast Pie, anything you want.
All
it's
right,
out there.
Perfect.
Thank
Good
you,
to
sir.
See you. Thank you very much. All right. Let's do the news. We'll go. we'll do the news. Brian Noonan in for Roe. Roe will be back on Monday. Justin Kaufman coming up at 7 o'clock. Waiting to see where Nick decides to sit. He's always jumping around. Nick Gizmati is here.
Tough
he is
choice.
The ringside reporter for the Blackhawks. And he is joining us in studio. Yes, you never know. But he's hunkered down next to you, Lauren. Nick, welcome. Glad you're here. You picked a good day to come. We might have a beverage or two for you.
I'm going to come here every Friday whether I'm invited on the show or not. I'll just come and be like a PA. Like, this is amazing.
Nothing like the Carnarvon wagon.
Yeah, that's why whenever they ask me to sit in for Roe, if it's a Friday, there's no hesitation. No matter what I have to cancel, my daughter's birthday, anniversary, it doesn't matter. I'm coming in on a Friday.
I might skip games to come in here and have a whiskey with you guys on a Friday. I love this.
Well, I'm sure they're happy to hear that over at the Madhouse. So last night, kind of disappointing. The four-game road win streak snapped in Vancouver. crazy game, because I mentioned this at the top of the show. When I went to bed late in the second, the Hawks were up by 2 goals.
Yeah, listen, all together, that's a great road trip for those guys. Yeah. But yeah, that was, you know what, it's funny. They went up 4-2, and I thought, okay, we're good.
Like, right.
It was back and forth for a little ways there. I thought Robin Leonard was playing real good. Last night was a classic situation of just some bad bounces. They probably could have had a 4-goal lead, midway through that hockey game, and things just sort of turn on them. And that's, I keep telling people, that's hockey though, right? Right. Like, you get a bad bounce. The goal that went off of Gilbert towards the end, that's a bad bounce. So all in all, I was pretty happy with that performance from them last night, and overall, that's a good road trip for them.
Yeah, I didn't think the score was a good indicator of necessarily how they played. I know it was 7-5. I didn't think Leonard had a – that's not a 7-goal performance from a goaltender. Like you said, it was a weird game. It was fun at times. It was frustrating at times.
Well, you could have said that about the last time we played the Canucks, even though we had the better outcome last time. It was the same situation.
Very true. And I was just going to point that out, Lauren. You make a great point there, too. And I think, Kev, to your point, Leonard, he had a tough one, too. He took 2 shots, one off of each shoulder.
You could see
then,
the welt on his neck. He messed up his knee a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's fine. Like, last night after the game, he was just icing it. So I don't think there's anything to be worried about there, thankfully. I mean, he's been an absolute rock-solid netminder for these guys so far. But a good game with an ending that didn't necessarily play out the way I thought it would.
Now, yesterday we were talking about this, that the Blackhawks had reached 500. They were only 4 points out of the wild card spot. It looked like it was going to be, that was like almost, we were saying a must win, which, at this point in the season, nothing's really a must win. But where does this put them mentally, momentum-wise? What does last night's loss mean?
Well, I'm just pulling it up here, too, in front of me. So, it's just funny. I had a conversation with a couple media people before they went into this road trip, and I looked through it, and I said, okay, Columbus is a win, Calgary's a win, Vancouver should be a win, but maybe,
Okay.
And then you look ahead, Detroit should be a victory on Sunday. Calgary, you should be able to come away with that one. Nashville, in my mind, is a 50-50. And then you've got Anaheim. So you've got 4 games every other day starting on Sunday. A lot of points available there. I mean, if you just take it for the homestand and you call it the 8 points, I think there's 6 or 8 points available on the board right there that you can then couple with what you just pulled off of this road trip. So they're still very much in the hunt and still very much capable of making the playoffs. And people are going to start to talk about the mathematics of it. Yes. Right now, mathematically, yes, the Blackhawks are still a playoff team. The naysayers will say, oh, well, yeah, but they can't put wins together in streaks. I see that very differently
right
now, Brad. I think that this is a very good hockey team, and the way that they are playing over these last 4 or 5 games, it's fundamentally different than where they were at the start of the year when they were struggling. So now,
what has changed? What's the big change in these last 4 or 5 games?
I think you're getting a full buy-in. I think you're finally seeing guys starting to play the hockey the way that the Blackhawks want them to play hockey. And that's not that they weren't buying in because they didn't want to.
Right.
It's just, they're figuring out how to play this new way, this new style. Jeremy Colleton's got a new way of doing things. He's got a new approach. And I don't care if you're the best player in the world or you're a rookie, it takes you a minute to figure out and play a system with 22 other guys the right way. And if you can figure that out, you're in good shape, and sometimes it takes a little while. And I think the biggest thing is that it's just such a fundamental change from the way that most of this core group has played in the past. Right. It just takes a second.
Speaking of best player in the world, Patrick Kane is playing like the best player in the world.
He's unbelievable. I'm going to tell you something. I've covered the game of hockey for a very long time. Getting to watch him up close and personal on a daily basis is...
It's crazy, huh?
It's intense. He's unbelievable.
I mean,
last night was
surreal. I mean,
he's so good.
He ties the game up. He gives them the lead. He's blowing past guys.
He's so good. I mean, it's just everything, though, right? It's his foot speed. It's his play away from the puck. It's what he does when he's got the puck on his stick. It's what he does. It elevates everybody else around him. Patrick Kane is brilliant.
I mean, he makes it look so easy.
So it's not. It's what he does out there is it's honestly magical. I told people that. They ask me all the time about that. And I think that's one of the biggest things coming here to Chicago that I've just been in awe about is, like, I get to watch this guy, like, up close and personal. Like, I did the away game in Colorado a couple of weeks ago and was on the glass for the game. And just even there, watching his speed and his reaction and how he controls the game, it's special. He's a special player.
Nick Gismondi is here. Sorry. He's the ringside reporter for NBC Sports. All right, go ahead with your question, Kevin.
Before we go to traffic, go ahead.
Made a long question. Nick has some nice whiskey in front of him.
Doesn't sound too serious, Leonard, but Crawford in that Sunday for sure.
I think at least for
the next couple games.
Yeah, I think so. I think, Leonard has been absolutely brilliant. Crawford has been absolutely brilliant. But I think what you've seen now is the evolution of Jeremy Colleton's going to now, okay, he let them both kind of split games. He was able to figure out, you know, who they were and how they were going to play. I think now what you'll see is he'll ride the hot hand. So Crawford gets in on Sunday. Crawford wins. Crawford will play on Tuesday and so on. I would imagine that's what Coach is doing, but
well, that would make sense since this was the first time that anybody, any of the goaltenders, had gone four games in a row starting. So
right, and remember, Leonard had come in on that win streak, so you know it made sense to play him. He was the hot hand. Goaltenders get into a bit of a groove, so now get Crawford in there. You can't go wrong with either of those guys.
No, is there a danger though if they've got the hot hand and then you know. You switch it off, that one of the hands will cool down?
Sure. I mean, that's obviously always a thing. And I think with those guys, as ultra competitive as Leonard and as Crawford are, that's a risk you have to run. But I think the way that you saw them play early on, goaltending hasn't even once been a question, right? So even when they were switching every other game, you were getting grade A performances out of the both of them.
You could rely on them.
You 100%. And you still, like, you, and that's, I think, the beauty of this tandem. You still can. So Crawford and Nett on Sunday, good to get him some reps here, too. You don't want him sitting too long. And Leonard obviously had three tough shots on him that, you know, two dinged him in the shoulder and then the knee twist. So give him a minute.
Want to stick around for a minute? I still have a cocktail in front of you.
I got nothing to do. I'm going to hang out here with you guys.
Nick Gismondi is here. He is the ringside reporter for the Blackhawks on NBC Sports. Kevin and Lauren are here. If you have a question about the Hawks, feel free. Nick, you up for answering a question if people got a couple?
I'd love it. I got nothing but time for you guys.
312-981-7200. Right now, though, Lauren's got weather and traffic. I need to pay attention. I'm like, oh, we're playing REM now? That's excellent. This is fantastic. A whole new format. It's Brian Noonan in for Roe. Kevin's in the studio. Lauren's in the studio. And Nick Gismondi is in the studio as well. You know him as the ringside reporter on NBC Sports covering the Blackhawks. Tough game yesterday, but overall, as you said, really good road trip. Four-game streak. Not too bad. Now we come home, and Detroit comes into town.
Ooh, where he is from, by the way.
Oh, are you a Detroit?
I am a Detroit guy. Yeah, boy.
You know what we say.
Have you heard it?
Yeah. Oh, I've got it. Yeah. The first time I was on with you guys,
have you practiced it?
Pretty bad. I have not.
Are you going to turn on your hometown?
I'm 100% all Chicago Blackhawks. I couldn't be any more Chicago Blackhawks. I promise you that. You know what it is? It's like I moved out of Detroit when I was. Detroit will always be home. You know how it is.
Sure.
You grow up somewhere. You
understand.
That's where I learned how to play hockey. That's where my broadcasting career began. So Detroit will always be home for me. Mom and dad are still there, but I mean, I moved out when I was 19 years old, so that was that was quite some time ago.
So, do you have any squid in your apartment?
There's no squid. Nope.
Just checking.
No, I will be not throwing any octopus onto the United Center ice anytime soon. Now, listen, it'll be fun to be a part of an Original Six matchup. And that, for me, has been one of the coolest things about this. My buddies back home that still live there chirping me a little bit for being a Blackhawk now. But at the end of the day, it's like, come on, man. I get to work for one of the best sports franchises in the world, in one of the greatest cities in the world.
You're part of a pretty cool family now.
It's awesome. And I love it here.
Not too shabby.
I am all Chicago on Sunday.
A listener texts in wondering, the world wants to know when Nick's mustache is coming back.
Oh, that will not be till November. That got very mixed reviews.
A lot of traction
there. Yeah, right. Very mixed reviews. Not at least until November. I shaved before I came here, so it's a daily
mustaches
thing.
By themselves are always get a lot of debate.
I got a lot of creepy
Like, people were ripping me for being creepy looking. Lauren, too. Lauren said it.
I agree. Yeah. When you have just the mustache.
Okay, it's great. I'm Italian, very Italian. I'm like, I'm first generation American. My dad was born in Rome and came over here in 54 in the Andradoria. So
does that mean you're going to have a handlebar by the end of the season?
Well, next, now that I know what I'm capable of, that was the first time I'd ever grown the mustache. Next year, I will. I'm going to bring that thing down.
Yeah, it looked like a piece of felt under your nose. It was pretty strong.
It was really bad. Like, I completely admit that it was bad. I wasn't allowed near schools and walked down the street and people would grab their kids. It was scary.
That's probably good.
You're one of our regular Blackhawks guests. Another Blackhawks guest who is actually a player, Connor Murphy, joins us once a week. Yeah. And I think he's been playing very well when healthy. And he's had a really good stretch over the past three, four, five games.
I'm a big fan of Connor Murphy's. I think he's been great. You watch the way that he plays and you watch how he is as well. He's a great guy in the room, and you can tell that. He's always happy. He's always smiling. He's always willing to do whatever needs to be done. But I do think, if you want to put a fine point on his play on the ice, he's been great. And you need guys like that that are going to carry you through the lineup when there might be some missteps on some of the other guys. A lot of young guys on this lineup right now. A lot of big injuries to a couple of huge additions to this team that you're like, okay, you miss those guys and you miss them in the room, and Connor makes up for that.
Well, I was reading, it's interesting the different perspectives some people might have on the Blackhawks. I was reading a game preview for Vancouver 2 games ago. It doesn't really matter, but it was from a national source, and it said, In the game preview, they referenced the Blackhawks as the rebuilding Blackhawks. And I go, I don't think a lot of us think of them as a rebuilding organization. I think it's an interesting dynamic where you still have the core that helped you win 3 cups.
Yeah.
You do have a young core, absolutely, that you're getting acclimated into the National Hockey League. But it was interesting to read that in a national game preview. I was like, I don't know if they have a great grasp on the team, but I wonder if people view it that way. I don't think so. Not when you still have Taves and Kane on the team and Duncan Seabrook Keith and Crawford. Corey Crawford.
Yeah, I don't think rebuild is a word that percolates for me when I'm I covered the Golden Knights for the last 2 years, and even looking ahead this season, when I wasn't officially with Chicago yet, midsummer, I was like, that's a good hockey team still.
Yeah.
You look down the rosters and you look at where teams are at and what moves they might be making. You try to get an idea of where they might be in the season. And I looked at the Blackhawks and I thought, that's a good team still. Hmm. I think anytime you still got Jonathan Toews and Duncan Keith and listen, I love, obviously, Patrick Kane, we pumped his tires a ton, but like I love DeBrincat. I love Strome. I love the way that Kirby Dach is playing. I think Boqvist is showing a ton of upside too. He's going to be a heck of a hockey player. And then on top of that, you add the addition of Ryan Carpenter. And I think he has been brilliant. I think he's underrated a little bit this year and not maybe getting the credit he deserves for coming in and playing the style he's playing.
He always stands out to me on the power play.
Power play and faceoffs. Mm-hmm. Yep. He's been great.
Identical records on the road and at home. What do the Hawks have to do to? Because it used to be they were unbeatable at the UC.
Yeah.
What are we going to have to? What are they going to have to do to try to turn that around?
Well, the last couple games that they've been good at the UC, they've quite simply played like they play on the road. It's a defense first mentality. Come out right from the very beginning. Jump on teams. Don't sit back. I mean, this crowd is. I've been in a lot of NHL buildings. I've never been in a building with a crowd like. That's at the Madhouse.
Yeah, it's impressive.
I mean, they are loyal, they are loud, they are there, and they are hockey knowledgeable. I mean, I could close my eyes while I'm at a hockey game and I could tell you exactly what was going on, puck possessions, whether the penalty was good or not, just based on the rise and fall of the crowd there. So,
missed call, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's fantastic. So I think that if they want to turn that record and get more wins on home ice, it's got nothing to do with the crowd. I would say, hey, stick with these guys, believe in these guys. They're about to go on a tear here, especially this week. It's play like they're playing on the road. It's a defense-first mentality. It's a smart, aggressive, fast-paced game.
Power play, it seems every season, everybody's concerned about the power play. It doesn't matter when they were winning the cups, people were worried about the power play. Is it a valid concern? Is it going to make that much difference down the road?
Well, it makes a difference, for sure. I mean, you need to be able to score with an advantage.
Right.
You for sure need to be able to score 5-on-3. I think for me, that's where it, like, glares a little bit more. If you can't bury one on a 5-on-3, you're going to have problems 5-on-5, right? So 5-on-4, power plays, yeah, listen, it factors in, but the power play is a funny thing. The power play is a lot more mental than it is physical or X's and O's. The power play setup that the Blackhawks have, both units, 1 and 2, they are effective. Beautiful power play goal last night.
Right.
So it's just a matter of sometimes it's just puck luck. Sometimes it goes, sometimes it doesn't. And when it isn't going, then you're gripping your stick real tight and you're thinking about every shot, or maybe you're hanging on too long, or maybe you pass when you're you probably should have taken the shot. Right. And you've seen that a little bit this year, but right. I think now for me, Brad, it's a lot more free flowing. I think they're a lot more comfortable. So
as they head into Detroit on Sunday, what do you think is the biggest adjustment that they're going to need to make for the rest of the season? Or do we just keep, as you said, keep playing like they play, try to play on the road like they play everywhere?
Yeah, I wouldn't make any, I think they're playing the way they need to be playing right now. That's what I feel like as a hockey guy. I wouldn't change much. I think the style that they're playing right now is perfect. I think their aggression, everything right now is finally starting to click. Line combos are good, but what we've seen from Coach is that he can move them around a little bit and still get some effectiveness. So if one gets a little bit stale, he makes a quick adjustment. And then they pick right back up, and then you can kind of ebb and flow. I love that. Like, that's not a common thing for most teams. If you make big line changes, you're trying to send a statement. And I think Jeremy does it for more motivation, and I think we've seen it work. So.
I do wonder if some of these big injuries have really prompted the other guys to step up. Because, as you mentioned, they're kind of really clicking now that this has been going on.
I think that's a great point, Lauren. I think that's a great point. I think you look at. Let me give you a quick example. We got a second here?
Very quick example.
Okay, quick example. Look at the Chicago the Colorado Avalanche. Mm-hmm. They had injuries at the start of the year. They stepped up. They were doing well. Now they get their guys back in the lineup, and they're not doing so great anymore. So when you have guys that are key to your team out of the lineup, you step up, you play better, you carry the rope. I think it's a good thing for the Chicago Blackhawks right now.
Nick, we'll be watching. Thanks for coming in. It was great to meet you. Stay enjoy your cocktail.
I
finish up. I know
fantastic.
You'll be back on Fridays, whether Roe invites you or not. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can see
Brian.
Nick Gizmati. He is the ringside reporter for the Blackhawks on NBC Sports. Let's do this, and then we'll see what's going on with Justin. It's WGN.
For Chicago's most accurate forecast, join me, Demetrius Ivory, and the WGN weather team around the clock on AM 720 and at WGNradio.com.
WGN Radio Chicago.